Camelot. Camelot. Camelot.
It's only a model.
Shh. Knights, I bid you welcome to your new home. Let us ride to Camelot.
We're knights of the round table. We dance when we're able. We do routines to call the scenes to put work in bed cable. We dine well here in Camelot. We eat ham and jam and spam a lot. We're knights of the round table. Our shows are more than table. So many times we give them rhymes that are quite unsingable. We're off so mad in Camelot. We sing from the dire Camelot.
I have to push the pram a lot.
Well, on second thought, let's not go to Camelot.
Sam, sorry.
It is a silly place.
What knight lives in that castle over there?
I'm 37.
What?
I'm 37. I'm not old.
Well, I can't just call you man.
You could say Dennis.
I didn't know you were called Dennis.
Well, you didn't bother to find out, did you?
I did say sorry about the old woman, but from behind you looked...
What I object to is you automatically treat me like an inferior.
Well, I am king.
Oh, king, eh? Very nice. And how'd you get that, eh? By exploiting the workers. By hanging on to outdated imperialist dogma which perpetuates the economic and social differences in our society. If there's ever going to be any progress...
Dennis, there's some lovely filth down here.
Oh!
How'd you do?
How'd you do, good lady? I'm Arthur, King of the Britons. Whose castle is that?
King of the who?
The Britons.
Who are the Britons?
Well, we all are. We are all Britons. And I am your king.
I didn't know we had a king. I thought we were an autonomous collective.
You're fooling yourself. We're living in a dictatorship. A self-perpetuating autocracy in which the working classes...
Oh, there you go, bringing class into it again.
That's what it's all about. If only people would...
Please, please, good people. I am in haste. Who lives in that castle?
No one lives there.
Then who is your lord?
We don't have a lord.
What?
I told you, we're an anarcho-syndicalist commune. We take it in turns to act as a sort of executive officer for the week.
Yes.
But all the decisions of that officer have to be ratified at a special bi-weekly meeting.
Yes, I see.
By a simple majority in the case of purely internal affairs.
Be quiet.
But by a two-thirds majority in the case of more...
Be quiet. I order you to be quiet.
Order? Who does he think he is?
I'm your king.
Well, I didn't vote for you.
You don't vote for kings.
Well, how'd you become king, then?
The Lady of the Lake. Her arm clad in the purest shimmering samite held aloft Excalibur from the bosom of the water, signifying by divine providence that I, Arthur, was to carry Excalibur. That is why I'm your king.
Listen, strange women lying in ponds, distributing swords is no basis for a system of government. Supreme executive power derives from a mandate from the masses, not from some farcical aquatic ceremony.
Be quiet!
But you can't expect to wield supreme executive power just because some watery tart threw a sword at you.
Shut up!
I mean, if I went round saying I was an emperor, just because some moistened bint had lobbed a scimitar at me, they put me away.
Shut up! Will you shut up?
Ah, now we see the violence inherent in the system.
Shut up!
Oh, come and see the violence inherent in the system! Help, help, I'm being repressed!
Bloody peasant!
Oh, what a giveaway. Did you hear that? Did you hear that, eh? That's what I'm on about. Do you see him repressing me? You saw it, didn't you?
There's something happening here, but what it is ain't exactly clear. There's a man with a gun over there, telling me I got to beware. I think it's time we stop, children, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down.
nobody's right if everybody's wrong. Young people speak in their minds are getting so much resistance from behind. Time we stopped, hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. What a field day for the heat. A thousand people in the street singing songs and a carrying signs, mostly say hooray for our side. It's time we stop, hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. Paranoia strikes deep into your life, it will creep. It starts when you're always afraid. Step out of line, the man come and take you away. We better stop, hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going. We better stop, hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going. We better stop now, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going. We better stop.
Always looking to fill the turbo and the Knights of the Round Table.
Hello, everybody. You're listening to the Knights of the Round Table at www.shazizradio.com. If you want to join in on the chat, you can jump over there to www.shazizradio.com/superchat.html. Got quite a bit of different subjects on the mind, and I'm sure Raymond's got a few on his. He's got some projects that he's working on that I think will be beneficial in the alternative energy community. And so with that said, Raymond, are you still there? I think he got his microphone muted. He's probably over there talking right now. Nobody can hear him.
Yeah, I hollered at you, yeah, I'll be here, but I remember I muted my mic, I'm sorry about that.
Well, what do you say we start off with your project, man, because that's something that we've been talking about for some time that I'm really looking forward to, you know, seeing the results, and you might maybe even putting in a little bit of input on what you're doing there.
Okay, if anybody's interested in the video, my YouTube user ID is Rhead100, which is Raymond Head, 100. Now, the video is titled, what is it titled?
I don't know, I thought it was like efficiency or something like that.
Yeah, oh boy.
Anyway, we'll post a link down there in Shaziz Radio for everybody, so you can get the chance to see that video. So if you happen to get that link there, just pass it over, Raymond, I'll put it in the chat room where you can drop it in there.
It's increased fuel efficiency, and it's called video number one, increased fuel efficiency number one, because I'm going to make a series of videos. lately, I've been watching a lot of videos on YouTube where people are starting to realize that gasoline does not burn. I mean, you could actually take a cigarette and dunk it in gasoline and put it out. Now, I wouldn't be advised to do that with a match, because a match will actually cause the gasoline to burn, unless if you took a cup of gasoline and filled it all the way to the top and started from the top and come down with a lit match, you could very likely put the match out without lighting the gasoline, because gasoline fumes are heavier than air, and if it's, you know, just a normal size temperature or normal temperature type day, the fumes would come off the gas. And you could actually take a match and dunk it really fast and put the match out. I'm getting too far into detail here.
Yeah, well, we don't suggest you try that right now.
Absolutely not.
Gas fumes are highly volatile. It's the fumes that we're trying to get to there.
But I have stuck the cigarette in gasoline and put it out. It will do it. Now, don't do that. Don't try that at home either. Don't blame me if you do. I'm telling you, don't do it. Okay. Anyway, gasoline will not burn. It's the fumes from gasoline that are... Many videos on YouTube right now of people actually building bubbler devices, heating devices, whatever, to cause the gasoline to vaporize. Now, the thing is, in my experiments in the past, it's easy to build a bubbler and cause to make a gasoline engine burn on nothing but fumes. Very easy. The problem you've got here is that in any vaporization process, you're taking heat off. Well, in all the experiments I've done, every time I've ever done this, we start off with the gasoline really warm, 108, 110, 111, 112 degrees. And it will run the engine for 8 to 10 minutes. And by the time, then all of a sudden the engine turns off. So we took a laser thermometer and we measured our gasoline heat, the heat in the gasoline, the temperature, when we started, and we measured the temperature when the engine turned off. And every time, when the engine turned off and would not run, the temperature of the gasoline was 93 degrees. And it would do it in 8 to 10 minutes. We even put our bubbler system down in a 2-gallon pot of 140-degree water, hoping to keep the gasoline warm. The gasoline cooled to 3 degrees, the engine turned off, the water itself was still well over 100 degrees, so it takes a tremendous amount of heat to keep the gasoline up warm enough to make fumes. Okay.
Let me help you out here for a second, Raymond, so we don't blow right over people's minds what we're talking about here. Basically, folks, what we're talking about is in the alternative energy community, they're always trying to look for the most efficient, the most clean ways to burn stuff. Well, if you take a real long, hard look at the internal combustion engine, it's a really amazing piece of engineering. However, it has a serious flaw in the system, such as the fuel delivery portion of it. So what Raymond's talking about is actually taking that fuel instead of sending it in a jet of a stream of gas that they've been vaporizing this gas before they put in. And so everybody knows that anything that you vaporize is pretty much going to burn better than anything that's a solid or liquid. So that's the one of the portions of what he's actually working on. But it doesn't just stop there. See, what Raymond's actually working on is taking an engine and being able to recover all the losses that engine is naturally going to make, such as heat and so on, and actually turn that wasted energy back into a usable form of energy to make it more efficient, at the very, very least, more efficient. Right.
That's where I was getting ready to jump away from the fumes, running the engine on fumes, and get to the heat of the exhaust. Now, running an engine of Briggs & Stratton 2.5 horsepower motor on just fumes alone, the exhaust was 660 degrees. This is energy, folks. Okay? This is true energy, and you're throwing it out into the atmosphere. So, the first video, since people have already learning how to run an engine on fumes, we're trying to make that more efficient, but we're like Suzanne's put it, we're trying to get as much useful energy as possible. So we're doing in this video that I just put on yesterday, what we're doing is we're taking the exhaust, the heat of the exhaust, and not throwing it out into the atmosphere, but putting it through a heat transfer device and actually causing it to pass through Peltier devices and make electricity. Then, since a Peltier device, the heat has to pass through it, you're still passing the heat out and getting rid of it. So now what we're going to do is we're going to try later to take this heat coming through the Peltier device and use it to keep the gasoline warm. Now, the gasoline's going to have to be kept warm for a while the engine is heating up. The water in the heat transfer exhaust, or muffler that we're making, so it can pass through the Peltier devices and make heat. So we're going to put some kind of electrical heat element in the gasoline to keep it warm until the heat from the exhaust can also warm the gas. So the heat from the exhaust is going to make electricity and keep the gas warm enough to make fumes to run the engine. In doing this, in reality, the actual BTUs, that is the heat energy in 1 gallon of gasoline, is enough that if it was used properly, could drive the modern day automobile 360 miles at 55 miles per hour. That's the actual mathematics of the BTUs of energy in a gallon of gas. Why are we only getting 12 and 15 and 16 miles per gallon in our automobiles?
Yeah.
Because throwing liquid gas.
And it gets better than that, folks. Not only are we going to, with this project and what we've been talking about, not only is it going to take that energy, the heat energy away as far as producing electricity off to the side, he's also going to take this heat away in the form of like hot water to basically attempt to use that for heating a building or something else like that.
Exactly.
See,
exactly.
Muddy put a solar panel on his truck at one point, and the whole purpose of putting a solar panel on top of his truck was to keep the battery charged up to the extent that the alternator never kicked on. And so, as long as your alternator is never kicking on, there is a fuel savings just in that alone, you know. So, with this system that you're talking about, you know, if you're charging batteries with that thing, the less that the generator has to kick back on because of the way that you're charging this battery. You see what I'm saying there?
Yep, I do. I really do. The thing is, you said it over and over and over again on MetaScience and here at Knights of the Round Table. If you can't find free energy, you're just plain not looking hard enough, because it is everywhere, and we're wasting it. We're throwing it away. It's like my cold steam turbine. You can actually boil water at 55 and 60 degrees. So at room temperature, you can make water boil simply by pulling a vacuum on it. Now, by pulling a vacuum, when it boils, the steam from it has no pressure. So how are you going to use it? You don't. As the water boils, it's being agitated. That is movement. That is energy. You can simply use that energy to make electricity by putting a magnet on a float and underneath a coil. Think about this a minute. The energy that we're using in the gasoline, we're turning it to fumes. We're running a gasoline engine on fumes, not gasoline. We're using it to turn a generator to make electricity. Then we're using the heat to heat water and transfer that heat through Peltier devices to make more electricity. We're using the heat coming off on the other side of Peltier device to keep the gasoline warm, which really is far more heat than we need. So like Shazin says, we're using it to heat water, to heat the house in the wintertime. If in the summertime you don't need the heat, then you simply use that heat to run a Stirling engine to make more electricity to help run your air conditioner.
Well, not only that, is it you can use some of that heat for a heat exchanger to actually, basically generate cold air for, you know, kind of like whenever you was talking about how the reason why you had to heat the gas to begin with was because whenever that gas is expanding and collapsing, shrinking back down, there's a cold factor to it.
Right.
Like air conditioners actually compress the gas to, make the liquid cold.
In fact, to do it even better, in the summertime, the excess heat that you would normally have to throw away, you don't. You run it through a cold steam turbine, make electricity to run your air conditioner. Your air conditioner gives heat off the backside of it, so you can also use it the heat from the backside of the air conditioner to run the cold steam turbine. So now all of a sudden you're getting more electricity than you could possibly use. So what are you going to do with it? Duh, throw it in the air? No, pipe it over to your neighbor.
Well, what's exciting about this deal is not just the fact that you're doing this project. It's what's actually could come out of this project if people pay attention to what's actually going on in the deal.
Right.
Because, like you just mentioned, the air conditioner on your house, it's putting out a lot of heat. You know, that's a lot of wasted energy.
Yes, and you could. It is possible. It is not plausible. It's possible. I've already done it. I haven't actually made electricity with it, but I've done the experiments and proven that you can boil water and you can use it to make electricity. The agitation of the boiling water will make electricity, and you can feed that electricity right back into the grid, which it will cut your air conditioning bill by 30 to 40% just from you, the heat of your own air conditioner. But now all of a sudden you've got 60% of electricity you need to make or buy. So you're making it with the fume running gasoline engine. You're taking more, you're creating more electricity with the gasoline fumes than you would normally. Now you're also creating more heat, so you're using the heat to make electricity. Now all of a sudden you're using the excess heat from that in another cold steam turbine to make more electricity. So now you've actually cut your electric bill by 90 to 95%.
All right, now here's another plus about this whole deal. That's why I can't wait for you to get this thing done. When you were out here, we did some experiments with that X13, and we were basically creating plasma using that X13 by spinning it up at some pretty high RPMs. We was getting some high voltage out of it, which you also found out when you touched it the wrong spot. But the key to this whole deal is the energy that you're wanting to pull off of this thing. If you use it in a completely different fashion than what you're accustomed to using a regular generator with, you'll get yet even more efficiency out of it by never putting that generator head under a load. You see what I mean?
Yep.
So, you know, we saw the difference between running that argon gas up into the plasma state as opposed to whenever that heat element finally kicked on that tungsten element and that thing almost dropped on its face. You know?
Right.
And so with that said, using everything we know, again, we're not trying to defy any of the known laws of physics. We're just trying to use all the laws of physics to our advantage to actually produce energy in the most efficient manner possible. When you take a look at the internal combustion engine, they say that over unity is not possible. You can never get out more than you put in. But if you take a real hard, long look at that motor inside your car, and you take a step back and pay attention to what all is really going on there, you're taking some gasoline, and you're basically running this engine. In the process of running this engine, you're going to generate enough heat that if you take one thing out of that system, that thing will have catastrophic failure. It will generate enough heat to literally destroy the block of that engine. And so with that said, I don't see how you can get much closer to over unity than actually having something that can basically self-destruct by just running. You know what I mean?
Right. Exactly what you're talking about.
So anyway, in the kind of world that we live in today, you know, there's a lot of radio networks out there and a lot of people trying to throw these positive pebbles in the pond, make the world a better place. And you got mainstream medias and stuff like that, and governments around the world always continuously hollering about we got to reduce our carbon footprint and we got to save the planet, blah, blah, and all this kind of craziness. But yet, you're not seeing anybody come to guys like me and you and Muddy and all the different researchers out there, Russ from RWG, and say, look, hey, you know, you got any ideas how we can make these cars run a lot better than what they did before? You know, this technology ain't new, and even the hydrogen technology ain't new. Stan Myers was driving around in a dune buggy back in 1970s, you know, running on water. And you tell your average Joe that you could run a car on water, they will look at you cross-eyed. But if they would have paid attention to basic science, then they would have understood that water is hydrogen and oxygen. You separate the two, and now you got the flammable gas. You know, a common table salt. One of them's a toxic gas, and the other one is highly explosive. You separate the two, but you eat it, and you eat the table salt, and you drink water, and you don't even understand. Your body's taking that stuff apart and turning it into fuel, you know?
You know, you just said something a minute ago about this technology, speaking of the running gasoline engine on fumes, this technology is not new. This technology is more than 100 years old. And I have told this several times on these radio shows that my grandfather, who died over 40 years ago and died at the age of, I think he was like 88, 89 years old. And that was over 40 years ago. So this technology, he is the one that taught me and showed me that that's how they used to run their big sawmills, their lumber mills, years ago, on gasoline fumes, not gasoline. Where and why did mankind come up with a carburetor that shoves liquid gas into your engine? Why? It's not necessary, and it is not efficient. They would run an entire sawmill 12 hours a day, 6 days a week, for a solid month on less than 10 gallons of gasoline.
Well, and that, the old farmers back in the day used to take, and when they got their tractors up to operating temperature, they begin to inject water into the cylinders in small quantities and basically save on fuel.
Exactly.
So, you know, this is...
I mean, it's wild. I mean, why is technology downsizing? That's what I don't understand. We're downsizing.
Well, it all boils down to one thing, Raymond. Possibly two things. Greed, finances, you know, that kind of stuff. And or stupidity, if you want to get rude about it. But
that's where you, me, Buddy, Thomas, all of us, we're getting together. We don't care about the money. We care about the people. That's why we're trying our best, making these videos, showing other people how easy this is. We're spending our time and our money on these radio shows to try to teach people. We're going backward, folks. We're going backward. When you build a car that puts gasoline in your engine, a liquid, and trying to burn a liquid that will not burn, the engine's hot. The gasoline you put in there turns to fuel, but you put more in there than you need. I mean,
well, you know,
I'm frustrated sometimes.
With all the things that's going on out here in this world's basically upside down. It's turning chaotic. I mean, people just can't even be respectful to one another anymore. They want to cuss each other out up and down a storm. And even the whole cursing issue in itself is just, you know, it's become casual. Nobody's affected by it anymore. Which, you know, I'm no prude. I cuss once in a while. I get mad. I'm a human or whatever. But, you know, it just basically boils down to the whole overall picture. You know, it's almost as if folks just don't care anymore. And those who do care are basically shouting to the wind. You got somebody out there that says, save the trees, all right? They're protesting, save the trees. And what they got is a wooden stick and a paper sign. Now, where's the common sense in that?
Right.
All right? And protesting the government. You know the government's got guns. You know they got police officers that are going to be willing to pepper spray you, beat you toothless, or whatever. Man, I'm just getting bombarded here. I'm adding Thomas to the call.
All right.
Anyway, without trying to sound like I'm going into a rant here, I'm just trying to say that the answers are out there, folks, and they've been there all along. It's not like, you know, this is all new stuff that we're talking about. We're just trying to say that if you take a little bit of common sense and put these pieces of the puzzle together, you step back and look at the big picture, you know, we got everything we need to literally build the perfect generating systems at the very least. And I'm saying the very, very, very least, the project that Raymond is doing right now is proof positive that you can make those generators and gasoline internal combustion engines more efficient. And more efficiency means a smaller carbon footprint. Am I wrong?
Shoot, I'm 100% right.
Well, and that's what we've been trying to say all along. And this plasma technology that I'm talking about, not the whole hoodoo voodoo version like Keshi talks about, you got to love your reactor, that you're not going to get free electricity if you're a jerk, you know, is that, you know, I'm talking about really common sense. When you take argon gas or any of the noble gases and you energize them into the plasma state, you actually get a couple things going on there. Actually, three for one. You can transfer energy through argon gas because of the electrons' interaction with each other. You can generate light and heat all in the same shot. So you're getting light in the visible light spectrum, you're getting heat, and you're able to transfer electricity, move energy from point A to point B. And so my technology has to do with taking and building a device that you can actually put towards any other generator that would do basically the equivalence of what Muddy's generator, or putting the solar panel on top of his truck to keep the alternator from ever kicking on. Now see, mine would be a little bit a step further forward, because now we're not invoking Lenz's law in the conventional sense as the way you'd run a regular generator. We know that if you induce a current in a coil of wire, you're going to create a second magnetic field that's going to oppose the first field that you're trying to draw the energy off of. And so, since we know that's going to happen, we need to devise a system that's going to ensure that that doesn't happen. We're not going to allow Lenz's law to be invoked because of the way that we're going to take that energy away from that generator. And what you're doing is basically another stepping stone into making that generator so super efficient that it hardly uses any fuel. From the time you put the fuel into the internal combustion engine, from the time that you're running it, you're taking heat away from that engine, which is going to make it run more efficiently because it doesn't have to work harder from the heat losses. And the oil itself, I was also going to mention to you about maybe trying to take some of that heat off of the oil with an oil cooler and then try to recapture some of that energy as well. Because if you can keep the temperature of that oil down to the point where it's just thin enough that it still will lubricate, but it doesn't break down the viscosity of that oil to the extent that now the bearings start to wear. You follow me so far?
I follow you. Excellent. I didn't even think about that.
Yeah.
You're right. You put an oil cooler on it, you're already creating, or not creating, you're already generating electricity. Put a little electric pump on it, run that oil through a heat exchange item or device, and keep it cool. The engine will last a lot longer, though. You're expanding the life expectancy of the engine by 300%.
Well, here's one I don't know if you have thought about or not. Your average compressor out there for your refrigerator basically takes a gas and pressurizes it, which in turn goes basically pressurizes it, and then when that is pressurized, it actually goes through like a condenser that actually allows that to cool back down rapidly, and when that happens, it causes the cold. Alright? Now, think about this for a second. You use a compressor to compress that at that point, but what if instead of using an actual compressor which takes electricity, you use the heat to actually heat a chamber that's right side by side? I mean, they're overlapping each other, and the heat, you know, because heat expands. So if you got a liquid any freon or any gas as far as that's concerned inside a chamber right next to a hot source, when that hot source heats up that liquid inside there and causes it to pressurize and expand, and then that works its way down to a condenser, now you get the same effect when it goes into that condenser to cool back down. You see what I'm saying? So now you're going to just use nothing but heat to actually, instead of using a compressor to pressurize that liquid, you're going to use the heat to do the work.
Isn't that how an ammonia air conditioner or a freezer works?
I believe so.
It works exactly like you're talking about. You take heat to make cold. simply by doing it exactly the way you're talking about, with a water and ammonia refrigerator.
Well, there you go, man. And so there's another plus on there. You could actually make a jacket around that engine head itself and take some of that heat away to pressurize some ammonia to actually make the air conditioning portion of it.
The refrigerators in RVs, trailers, and motorhomes run on gas, propane gas.
Yeah.
And they actually freeze trays of ice in like 45 minutes to an hour, and the flame that runs it is about the size of a birthday candle.
Yep.
But you're using fire to make ice. It's possible, folks. Plausible. It's not dreamy. It's not out of this world.
Yeah, this isn't science fiction. This is science fact.
Yes. It's science fact.
So
they've done it.
You know,
why are we backing up?
Instead of standing out there protesting the government to save the planet, save the trees with your wooden stick and your paper sign, unless, of course, like I think Thomas mentioned one time, it was recycled materials. Well, either way, you know, that's just a tiny little example of some of the lack of common sense that goes on in this world. You know, there's a lot of craziness. Yeah.
Can I jump in there a second to just make a point about what Raymond said?
Yeah, go ahead.
I had an RV. It was a lovely Fiat Ducato chassis. It was a 3.5-ton truck. It was 6 beds. It was awesome. We had a great time in it. But it had a 3-way fridge. It could run off solar, propane, or electricity.
Right.
So when you pulled up and you didn't have any sun and you didn't have any electricity points to plug in, you could run it off a butane bottle.
So essentially it was using either of the input energies to heat up a gas and pressurize it, and there you go.
You know, think about it. If you really know how it works, when you use electricity to run those things, it's not running a pump. It's not running a compressor. All it's doing is running a heating element.
Yeah.
So you're still running it off of heat. It's just how you generate the heat. With propane, with electricity, however, it's still making it heat. And that's the beautiful part about it. They don't back up. We're backing up.
Raymond, the beauty of being part of this club is there was only a pilot light.
Right.
There wasn't anything more.
Actually, the pilot light was, I said, a flame off of a birthday candle, but in reality, the actual flame running one of the refrigerators is smaller than the flame on a birthday candle.
Well, and that's something I've been trying to point out to people a long time ago. I did a video quite some time back called Redneck Hot Tub. And what I did was essentially took, instead of using a 220 heating element, I got a coffee pot element, a little 110, light-duty coffee pot, and circulated water through a basically an old fiberglass bathtub. And, of course, it takes about 4 to 6 hours before it will get all the way up to being real hot, you know, operating temperature. But once it gets up there, it doesn't take anything to maintain that heat, you know. That's what that pilot light, you know, if you actually measure the temperature at the pilot light, you know, that's a lot of heat going on. And you're just transferring that heat, just like you'd be transferring any other energy, electricity, you know, through whatever deal you're going through. And so with that said, that redneck hot tub, once you got that thing hot, I mean, it literally gets so hot you can't even set the doggone thing. You got to unplug it for a while to let it cool down. So you can set in it, but I can run that all day long for the price of a coffee pot, whereas the other version would be using the whole 220 volts AC at whatever amperage that it's, those things naturally run at, which basically I think...
The ammonia and water refrigeration system, a 20-pound propane bottle will run one of those refrigerators for 6 months. Think about that a minute, folks.
A little bird told me recently that there's a couple of people that are coming up for their final exam in their electrical engineering degree, so can you keep posting videos, because they're desperate.
Well, I just posted a video yesterday, and I actually posted the link down into the chat room over there at Super Chat. My lab kind of got destroyed, so my videos aren't going to be from my lab. I hope to be like they've been the last several months. I'm going to have to be creative, let's just say that.
So, you know, the thing is, water and ammonia refrigeration system will run on methane gas just as easy as it will propane. In fact, just there is no difference as far as its efficiency.
Yeah, but Steve,
the thing is, anything organic, if you allow it to rot underwater, will make methane, will generate methane gas.
Yeah,
and this is just some things organic will produce more gas in a shorter period of time than other things. Chicken manure is just about the best.
Before we get too far away from Steve's comment, Steve, refer him to this podcast when we're done.
Okay,
I will.
Go ahead, Raymond.
People might not appreciate what you do, Shaziz, but there are people out there that do actually pay attention.
Well,
in areas you might not expect.
You know, look at these people that are building compost piles. Okay, you can take a compost pile, a heat generated in its drying, rotting, can heat your home. It can run a cold steam turbine.
Muddy's talked about coffee pots in composting.
You can go underwater and generate methane gas. You don't have to put it in a pile. You put it in a container, put some water on it. Take the methane gas off and run your cold steam turbine.
Yeah.
Run your gasoline engine on methane gas. Your gasoline engine, I have run them on propane, methane, acetylene, you name it.
What was you trying to say, Steve?
Well, I was going to say that, you know, Muddy deserves a bit of respect because he's the first person I've ever mentioned it since the Victorians that point out that you can actually heat water in a compost heap, pump it through your greenhouse, and keep your greenhouse warm in winter.
Yeah.
So you can grow tropical plants in a high humidity environment.
Yes.
And you can do that by going to Starbucks and saying, give us your throwaway coffee grounds. Because when they break down, they release heat.
Oh, that's another thing. You know, there's in the food industry out here in the United States, there's a time limit on all the food that can be actually, you know, consumed by humans according to the Food and Drug Administration or whatever. And so with that said, all that garbage, instead of going to the dump, could go to a massive compost deal to generate a lot of heat. You see what I'm saying?
Yes, I do.
And so, you know, even that could be recycled. So, I don't understand why companies aren't doing this. You know, it wouldn't be that hard to build a composter or something like that. You know, that could actually generate heat and, at the very least, supplement their electric bill via heating the water, like Muddy was talking about.
Right.
So, you know, there's all kinds of possibilities.
Well, Shaziz, you said this aquaponics system that I'm working on.
Yeah.
What happens when you harvest your vegetables, you cut off the roots and you send the top half of a lettuce to the market? You take the roots, you dig a hole that's 2 feet deep, and you throw all the cuttings into the hole, you cover it back with topsoil, and you keep working your way down a trough until you've got maybe 10, 15, 20, 30 feet, depending on how big your system is, of decaying vegetable matter that's going to turn into nice compost.
Right.
So you dig a small trench, you fill it up, you dig a trench next to it, and you're working your way down the road, and eventually you're going to have this really, really nice earthen compost that's going to be full of worms.
The name for that theme is French Intensive Gardening.
Or a double dig garden as well.
Well, either way, you know, after listening to you guys and knowing all the stuff that I've researched and all this, now you can understand why I get so frustrated. I'm sure you feel the same way.
Shaziz, I am no longer frustrated because I'm going to go to a place where people are going to let me do various different things, and I have the opportunity to showcase everything they're talking about. Now, I've kind of been a bit quiet on YouTube and social networking recently, but when I get to where I need to be, this is the point where I'm actually going to try everything we're talking about.
Cool.
And some of it works, some of it's not going to work because I'm not really that good.
Well, we're going to be sitting there saying,
oh, come on, you know, give us a break, will you? I didn't tell you how to do it like that.
We'll only be a Skype call away from being able to assist you with your project, so, you know, that's a plus.
You know, I've had an opportunity in my life to actually try something constructive. In a place where people are going to let me do it and actually be thankful that I tried. So the world isn't all negative in all places, but there's certain places where, well, the status quo rules. But it doesn't have to be like that.
Well, I can do it.
I'm nobody. I'm just some armchair warrior that's actually got an opportunity to do something.
What you're talking about there is actually kind of leads into another subject that I kind of wanted to mention on today's show, is about what's going on out there in this world isn't all negative. There are people out there trying to do something. The frustration from at least my part comes from the fact that we got all these different technologies that's been around for so long, and we got every resource necessary to ensure that there ain't nobody that has to sleep underneath a bridge unless they so choose to do so, their own free will. You know, if somebody wants a home, they should be able to have a home. If they live out in, a place where modern society would classify as a third world country, I don't like that terminology, third world country, because it basically degrades another human being that should be able to have access to clean water and food. And we've got the knowledge and the technology to show them how to do it. You know, your gardening projects that you're talking about, Raymond's generator ideas, my work, Thomas's work, all of this stuff combined to what I like to call the dream team, put into action. If these are not just radio shows that we do, but people take these ideas and run with it. That's why I was so excited about that YouTuber that I posted that video yesterday on the Mad Science Show. Because he took that hard drive motor that I showed him how to generate electricity from a hard drive motor, and he took it a step further, and was actually going to build a steam turbine out of it, and even possibly a Tesla turbine, to see how far that he could actually take that idea. Now, this idea that Raymond is working on right now, I am so excited about this, because it takes what would have normally been an inefficient design, even though it is really amazing engineering what actually goes into an internal combustion engine. The fuel delivery system on there is the weakness in that piece of equipment. And so what Raymond's fixing to do is show people how to take all the wasted energy that thing actually generates and use it for something positive, you know, such as charging batteries or, you know, whatever. But it doesn't just have to stop there. I honestly believe, and as crazy as this is going to sound, I honestly believe that you could run an entire household, if done properly, off of a 2,500-watt generator. That's including lighting, heating, and everything. You know, you're not going to run the house like you used to run it. It's going to be totally a different beast, so to speak, such as, you know, like the difference between fluorescent lighting and LED lighting. You know, there's a big difference when you talk about going from like the tungsten element resistive lights that all the way down to a less one such as the fluorescent, and then a step even further down to where you're using LED systems to where it doesn't take near the energy to get as much light as you want out of the deal. And so with that said, that means that generator doesn't have to work near as hard. And so the more load you take off of that generator, the more heat losses that you recapture out of it. You're heating your water in your house with it. You can circulate that water through the radiator system for, heating and cooling with a low voltage pump circulating system. It doesn't have to go through there fast. It just needs to be able to travel, you know, push it around. And so with that said, the only really things that you'd be running off of that is the doggone the circulating system. And if you actually really did have to put a heavier load for maybe a electric stove to cook on or something like that, which if done right, you could take that away as well. But if you did have to, you'd still have part of that 2,500 watts that you could still run that load. You see what I mean?
Sure is. For a very long time, I've been living in the Northern Hemisphere, and I've had to battle cold. Now I'm in the exact opposite. I'm in Equatorial Asia, so I have to battle the heat.
Yeah.
It's trying to find that Goldilocks zones of plants.
Well, crazy as it sounds.
Heat is energy.
Yeah.
And I need to capture as much of that as I can and make as best use of it as possible.
Sure, well, crazy as it sounds, like Raymond mentioned earlier, you can turn heat into cool. I know it sounds nutty, but think about it for a second. You get inside your car in the middle of summer after the windows have been up, there's a lot of heat going on inside that car. I mean, you could cook in there. Imagine boiling water in there.
She says, never take a rental car in Dallas in summer with leather seats in it.
Yeah, especially if you're wearing shorts.
You park it in Walmart for an hour and you come back and you're going to suffer for the first 10 minutes.
Anyway, so basically taking some of that heat, like if I was living in a desert, I'd be making the equivalent of a heat exchanger that would take that heat and pressurize a gas and then put that gas down into a condenser portion to cool it back down rapidly and then basically turn it into air conditioning. So use solar to cool your house down. It's not beyond the realms of possibility. And To take it a step further, you might have to go, because of the temperature out in the desert and maybe the lack of humidity or whatever, bury a culvert pipe about 30-foot culvert pipe about 6 feet down in the ground, so that whenever that heat goes down through there, you put your condenser down inside that culvert pipe, and as the hot air is being drafted from one end to the next of that, it'll cool down that condenser rapidly enough to exchange that pressurized gas that you just created from the sun up above down to, basically cold air. You see what I'm saying?
Well, which is this. I was looking through 5 inventions you've never heard of on YouTube recently. And there's a couple of lads that have come up with a system of condensing moisture out of the atmosphere on a bicycle. You know, when you go up into the mountains on your mountain bike and you're flying along the road, the airflow going across it is sufficient to fill a bottle of water. I mean, they didn't give any specific details, and I'd say you'd have to travel quite a way before you get a 1 litre bottle full of water. But it's clean water.
Well, I understand exactly how they're doing it. Because all you have to have is heat. All you have to have is a temperature difference. So if they got like a little generator on the side of their bicycle as they're pedaling down the road or whatever, it's going to generate the energy to get that element hot. Now, when you're driving down the road, you can obviously feel a temperature difference because of the cool air blowing across you. It will literally act as a dehumidifier, pulling moisture out of the air, and then that would go down into the bottle and fill the water up. I mean, it's a brilliant idea.
They don't even have that, mate. They have 2 sides of cooling fins. One side catches the air, the other side condenses it.
Well, there's an even easier way. So,
you've got a solar panel for when you're stationary, and it's not a big panel. It's about the size of an A4 sheet.
If we took and used everything that nature has provided all along and used it efficiently in harmony with nature, there wouldn't be no reason to be hollering about save the planet or save the trees and all that kind of stuff there, because there is more energy out there than we could ever use in probably a trillion lifetimes, man. And if I say that, I'm going to have some people just, skeptical, dry... Nope, that's not possible, blah, blah, you know. Go back and read your basic science books, man. That's all I'm saying.
I'm English, and they always say when you travel abroad, don't drink the water.
Yeah.
But to be perfectly honest, we like tea. So you have to boil it anyway.
Yeah. Well, You know, there ain't nothing, there ain't no parasite that can live up there in the air like that that we know of. So, pulling your moisture out of the air and drinking that water seems like it'd be already purified. So why aren't they taking dehumidifiers and small solar panels with inverters down to these places where they need water? I'm going to tell you, it's probably down here in near some of these jungle settings, the humidity's probably god-awful down there. You know?
Well, believe it or not, the average humidity in the Republic of Ireland, even in a cold climate, is still 85%.
Well, there's free water right there.
And they say that they're running out.
Now, see, now they're going to get me on that rant again about California talking about a drought and getting thirsty because they're running out of water and they're standing next to the ocean, man. Are these people, they must have lost their doggone mind. Man, haven't they ever heard of Dubai? Have you seen what they've done over there?
Yeah, I've been there. Just out of interest, does Donald Trump have any golf courses in California?
I don't know, man. But I bet he's got, like, nice plush green lawns if he does.
Well, the question is they blame him for everything else. Can they blame him for that?
Probably.
Because he went to places like Scotland, where they have plenty and plenty of rain.
Donald Trump's hairpiece absorbed up all the moisture out of the air, so it ain't raining.
Well, I was thinking of...
Does he wear a hairpiece?
I honestly think Donald Trump should get a carbon award, because I'm sure that that's pulling out carbon out of the atmosphere every second of the minute.
Anyway, you know, that wasn't very nice of me cracking on Donald Trump. I don't know if that's a hairpiece or not, so... I'm just saying it didn't look natural, whoever his barber was. Anyway, I ain't got nothing to talk about. I got mad science hair, but, you know, hey, that's a sign of intelligence,
Donald Trump,
right?
If Mary meets Paris Hilton, there's going to be one angry chihuahua.
Yeah. And so, anyway, where do we go to with all this research, guys? We've been doing these radio shows for quite some time. There's tons of podcasts out there with tons of ideas that have been mentioned over and over. And what Raymond's doing right now is a real-time experiment. So I'm asking everybody out there who subscribes to Shaziz Radio to go over there and subscribe to Raymond and keep an eye on this project, because it could benefit you. If you only got a small generator and you got a large house and you need to be able to, during the worst case scenario, be able to keep that thing running and keep your house cool and warm either way, you know, that technology right there all combined together is going to be a lifesaver for those folks out there who only got one little small generator. And then if you pay attention out there, there are wood gasifier techniques where you can use firewood to basically make fuel. The ash that comes up out of your stove that they call creosote that builds up in your pipe, and you got to run a cleaner through your wood furnace every so often so you don't start a fire. That could be used as fuel. You've got hydrogen technology. Building a hydrogen cell is ridiculously simple. And you pay attention to all the safety portions of it, and you ain't going to have any problems. There's so many different things, from the Stirling engine to the actual flux wind turbine, the older technologies such as the Van de Graaff generator, the Wimshurst design, the Lord Kelvin device. There's so many different ways to capture energy. And it doesn't matter whether it's 10 degrees below zero or 100 degrees below zero or 100 degrees above, you know, whatever, hot outside, you know. Everything that nature does has a lot of energy potential to it. When the wind's blowing, that's energy potential. When the wind isn't blowing, you got the sun going on. There's thermoelectrics that can be done from the ground. There's heat exchange that can be done from the ground. There are basically earth battery technology, galvanic actions from two separate types of materials being connected to each other down in the dirt is basically making a battery. There's all kinds of different chemistry that are non-toxic that you can make batteries. For Pete's sake, they got a battery out there they call the pickle battery, where they took a car battery that was 10 years old, took some pickling salt and some baking soda, they flushed out the battery with the baking soda to clean out all the crud out of it, and then they put a mixture of pickling salt and water back down in this battery, and when I say water, I meant like distilled water, back down in this battery, and charged it up and started a truck with it. So, even the batteries that are classified as junk, I mean, I got a video that I, a series that I've done out there called Free Thinkers, and only one person's actually got it so far, that I'm using all these old dead batteries, not as batteries, but as capacitors, which in a sense are batteries. Because they still have positive and negative plates in there, they can still hold a charge. I'm using a negative ion generator to put part of that charge on there. I'm using a static generator that's driven by the wind to put a charge on there. I'm using an electric fence charger, which is actually pulsing via the solar that is actually putting a charge on there. So I'm taking static electricity from multiple different directions. I'm taking energy out of the dirt. I'm taking energy from the wind itself and the sun. And that thing has been running. If you go back and look at my very first Free Thinkers video, I'm saying it's got to be at least anywhere from 6 to 7 months that thing has been running a load continuously that long. And every one of these batteries on there are dead batteries, according to the standard of how you'd measure a car battery. Doesn't have the amperage to run, to start your car. But it still has the amperage, the voltage, and everything necessary to run a lighting system, three charging systems, and keep that battery, those batteries with some energy in them. Now, is that Shazam, crazy?
I can germinate 160 seedlings. Excuse me. I can germinate 160 seedlings. Using 60 watts of power.
Oh, and I want to tell you something, Steve. Go check out Cody's lab on YouTube. He does a series about a mine that he's digging. It's like a gold mine or some sort of mine. It might be a silver mine. I'm not sure. Either way, but in his deal, he's also run an experiment in there where he's used red and blue LEDs to start to grow some seeds inside the cave, inside the mine. And these were just regular red and blue LEDs, and what he was curious about was whether or not that once it got past the actual the plant beginning to grow, whether or not it would get green to show that it actually was getting enough light to actually grow. And by the time it was all said and done, he actually had green leaves on those plants inside the cave, using nothing more than red and blue LEDs.
Well, the blue spectrum is for germination, the red spectrum is for flowering.
Yeah.
But what most people might not be aware of, when the sun rises in the morning, in the northern hemisphere at least, you're getting quite a strong blue spectrum. And that wakes the plants up. And by the time the sun's setting, you ever seen the sun set? And all the clouds turn red.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
Yeah, well, you're getting a much stronger red spectrum at sunset, which is going to promote flowering in your plants. It's from the nanometer range from 450 to about 750. The blue is in the low strains, red is in the high.
The only problem that he had in this situation that he did, he used a solar panel to pipe in the electricity to run the LEDs. The only problem he had was a mouse was eating the leaves off the vegetables. That's it. But he was actually growing stuff inside a cave.
Mate, I've grown stuff in a box that's never seen daylight, with the lid closed. The curtains have never been opened.
Well, the plus
I lived in a cave for about 3 years. I didn't see sunlight.
The plus about that, as far as I'm concerned, is when you're talking about like lighting systems to grow like hydroponics or aquaponics or inside growing and stuff like that, it shows me that you can actually use an LED system, which ain't going to take nowhere near the power that it would take to run some of these grow lamps that people's got.
Yeah, but Shaziz, you don't get the same yield.
Well, maybe not. Maybe there's some other factors that have to be at play in there. But either way, you know, it's at least, at the very least, you can get the starter plants.
When you get lumens that come out of an LED, a metal halide, a sodium bulb, I mean, all the different types of implementations of bulbs from fluorescent to LED, it's the penetration of the lumens as it goes down through the plant that's important.
Yeah.
Now, if you're getting high-strength LEDs, they're going to penetrate a lot further through the canopy.
Well, his was green, healthy plants.
Oh, yeah.
Until the mouse got a hold of them.
Yeah, but Mother Nature always takes her cut.
Yeah.
You're like Flaxman, you can't avoid it.
So anyway, you know, those are all just small examples of everything we've been talking about for years, you know. If we
don't need to be a genius to put this stuff together, mate, because I am certainly not.
Well, and that's another good thing about it. It's average Joe's doing what we've been talking about. Raymond's an average Joe. I'm an average Joe. Thomas is an average Joe. Tom is a little bit smarter than the average Joe because he's able to retain a whole lot about chemistry and things that I can't.
Thomas a blinking genius.
Are you still there, Thomas? You're not being thrown under the bus.
Yeah,
turn your microphone on.
I'm almost here, so.
He must have had a hard night.
I think Thomas is currently on a sugar crash, so we'll be gentle.
Yeah.
Alright, well, we'll catch up with you, brother. Just go ahead and sleep it out.
I'm researching actually a heating process because something that I got, the way they sent me the kit to assemble it, they basically pre-assembled some of the parts, and it was a very, very foolish thing to do because it made it impossible to put the thing together without breaking some of the parts.
Ooh, that ain't no good.
Little delicate wires and stuff like that. They should have left that stuff unassembled and let you slap the thing together and then put those things in, you know.
Well, not everybody out there in this world is an engineer, so some of these companies out there, they just want to make some money quick, so they'll slap it together and send it out to you regardless of whether or not it's
junk.
Yeah,
I think what it is it looks good to the consumer because you see all this, you know, thing that's kind of technical and semi-complex is already done for you, so yeah, let me go ahead and get that one. I'm not going to get the one that I got to put all the pieces together because I don't know if I can do it or not. But the fact is, once you know, get down to it, there's another part or two that should have been assembled into it to ensure that you could actually put the whole thing together, and they didn't do that last step.
Yeah.
So.
Well, and that's why I think that the research that you're actually doing, even just putting that thing together, I was telling you yesterday or somewhere around about in a private conversation that I think that that system that you're going to have when you're done making all your improvements is going to be better than one you could buy off the doggone store shelf because of the way that you go through things meticulously and plan ahead for, you know, possibilities, you know, bearings wearing out or skipping or stuff like that, you know. So, I'm looking forward to seeing how that progresses. Anyway, so, basically, folks, out there in this world, there's so much going on. Everybody pretty much going crazy, watching their Dancing with the Stars or Who Wants to Be a Zillionaire or whatever else, Kung Fu fighting flicks or... You know, it's a world of distraction, not to mention the fact that the mainstream media, there's a terrorist behind every bush and, you know, got to deplete the...
Yeah, there is, mate, isn't there?
Yeah.
Literally.
And so...
Oh, man, could you get any more political than that?
Wait a minute, what?
You'd have to say what's the difference between what they want you to believe and the truth.
Yeah, there's
they want you to believe there's a terrorist under any behind every bush, but the truth is every bush is a terrorist.
Now that was a political, that would be good for a campaign deal.
Well, I was gonna say that was probably better than my T-shirt idea for back whenever it was actually any one of them. Was in office. The only way you'd be able to use it again is if Jeb decided to actually get in there. It would be the T-shirt would basically just be a picture of the White House, And over it'll say, it's time for the White House to get a shave. You know, shave the bush.
Oh, man. Anyway,
Michelle Hillary.
So, he basically, Stephen Gibbons just posted a link over there in the chat room for, on eBay, you can buy some 1,000-watt LED grow light panels. Cool.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway, so...
It's all about the lumens penetration.
Yeah.
The reason why LEDs don't work as effectively as the metal halide or high-pressure sodium is because the lumens don't penetrate through the canopy as far. So when they're small plants, they're fine. But once they start getting larger and larger and larger and they start growing higher, you have to control the growth of the plant. Because you can have a small, bushy plant that has 20 peppers on it, like bell peppers. I've created them myself.
I've seen some LED systems that will literally penetrate your cranium into the center of your brain and bounce off the back of your skull and make it look like you got headlights on.
Yeah, but we're not plants, mate. You have to understand that what's good or bad for us is not necessarily the same for them.
Yeah. Dang.
You're not going to tell
me. Are you sure about that? Because they have found that by using red LEDs to shine on a cut on a wound on a person's finger, that they have healed in less than a third of the time. That we're not. Are you sure we're not doing some sort of photosynthesizing there?
We may be.
I don't know what we're doing, and I have no interest in researching that. But I do know. The light spectrums that are beneficial to us are not necessarily beneficial to plants.
Oh, yeah. The frequencies might be different, but we're doing something with light that obviously they've completely discounted us as nothing more than basically a, what do they call that, a parasite, where we basically live off of the life that's generated from light by plants. That the only way we can exist is modified organic material that we then continue breaking down into its lower state. And the fact is, we may actually have more to us than that.
That actually brings me into a chemistry question. Uranium nitride.
That's not a question.
Okay, well, when they... kind of separate uranium from nitrogen, they use it as a commercial fertilizer.
Really?
Which unfortunately has started to lead to trace elements of uranium-238 being found in soil samples and vegetables.
Well, it depends on concentration, because if you've got a granite counter, there's your traces of uranium-238 in that.
Yeah, well, they're talking about 7 to 100 CI.
Hmm.
That's coming from somebody that doesn't have a clue what it means, but that's the research I've been reading.
I wonder if I can get a sample
CI
on that dirt.
Uranium-238 dangerous concentrations.
Well, I'd say that you know, cutting out any of that in general, like not using. Any building materials that have radiation in them either is a good idea. That's why they have tons of gypsum out in Florida that they can't use, because there's still too high of a concentration of radioactive material that's in it. And it's all from stuff that they pulled from the ocean to make, you know, chemicals like phosphoric acid and whatnot.
What is CI? Sieverts? Or is that millisieverts?
I don't know.
I don't know, but all I'm hearing is...
Find out.
I haven't seen the term before. Usually they do part per million.
I don't know, but all I'm hearing is more free energy, man. I mean, that's the way I look at it, because as this...
Well, that's just it, though. Sometimes the amount of energy can go beyond what you need and be too much. And the energy that's being released from radioactive materials, those particles, the high-speed particles that shoot off of those atoms... will actually knock other atoms out of their orbit. Like when they pass through, say, a DNA strand and knock a single atom out of it and cause it to basically completely have a catastrophic failure. It starts doing something so completely different than what it's supposed to be doing that you end up with cancer.
Well, I understand that concept, but I also understand that, you know, it, first off, like what we mentioned about the doggone nuclear industry out there boiling water with hot, refined radioactive rods, and, you know, you're using modern technology or modern knowledge with ancient technology such as steam generation when they could have done it safely using coal and recaptured that exhaust off of that coal to reburn as fuel and not have the potential to be knocking atoms off of people's DNA and such. So the lack of common sense just for even putting a doggone nuclear reactor together was ridiculous if they weren't going to you know, look ahead at all the potential hazards to using that, and not to mention the fact that some of these, or a lot of them, are built on known fault lines where you could have a potential crack in the earth to make a mess going on. So
I'd have to wonder where the information is on this, so I can have a better look at it, because uranium is extremely expensive resource, and I cannot see them even leaving the tiniest trace of it. Like, even you know, we're talking like milligrams of the stuff. They're like, where is that? Where is it? You know, nanograms. Bring that back in here, man. What are you doing walking off with that? It's a splinter in my finger. No, you get back in here. You're trying to steal uranium.
Yeah.
Well, you know?
You used to have a friend over in Australia that lived next to a old uranium mine. And so, you know, they was all concerned about whether or not they could drink the water because it'd be radioactive or something.
Right.
But in its natural state, I mean, you walk through radiation all day long. You know, the sun's putting off a form of radiation.
Different types.
Yeah.
Different types. They have absorption rates. And
yeah.
Some radiation can be absorbed by something as simple as just some gas atoms, like what they call vacuum ultraviolet. Vacuum ultraviolet is basically ultraviolet light that is so highly reactive, has so much energy in the photon that the second it comes into contact with the surface of our atmosphere, it's absorbed.
Well,
and it is strong enough that if there's carbon dioxide floating around up there at the top of the atmosphere, it will drop raw carbon and release free oxygen from the atmosphere just by striking that carbon dioxide. It breaks it.
Well, the health environmental issues of uranyl nitrate is it's an oxidizing and highly toxic compound. When ingested, it causes severe renal insufficiency and acute tubular necrosis, and is a lymphocyte mitogen, which is a lot of big words I don't understand. Target organs include kidneys, liver, lungs, brain. It also represents a severe fire and explosion risk when heated or subjected to shock in contact with oxidizable substances.
What?
So, yeah, uranium is highly reactive.
Your washing machine when you're trying to get rid of stains with oxy action.
That makes me pose a question. With that
too
said, why aren't these geniuses that's putting all these different systems into play out there, such as all the ways that they, fertilize the gardens or the farm fields or whatever, all the way down to all the different chemistry? Why aren't they sitting at the round table and sitting here talking about the potentials and where better to go with this? Because there's enough brilliant people around that can understand, you know, some basic science enough to say, look, that's probably not a really good idea to do that, you know, and if you are going to use this particular material, what kind of systems that you would have to actually filter the bad stuff out before it ever even gets into the food supply or water supply or whatever. You see what I'm trying to say here, man?
Oh, yeah.
You know,
I'm thinking food supply, and I like clean food.
Yeah, I do too. And I don't want genetically modified food in my salad or anything like that. I don't want toxic waste in my salad. So why would I want it in my kid's salad as well, you know? If it's got a label on the toothpaste that says if you accidentally ingested call poison control and you're putting that toothpaste in your kid's mouth, then something ain't right. You know?
Well, this true story. When I was working in Holland in 1992 to 1998, I was mostly picking tulips working with lilies, you know, working in greenhouses, growing vegetables, all sorts of stuff like that. And I met a Dutch guy who was a specialist in plant breeding, and he couldn't wait for the next Chernobyl, because I think it was 1986, wasn't it, when Chernobyl went poof?
Yeah, it's been a while.
Less than 10 years later than that, they had 2,000 new varieties of tulips in Holland.
Cool.
Well, I mean, you're telling me that that radioactive fallout didn't all give us a good coating?
Well, I don't know, but I was thinking when you was talking about all the different new breeds of tulips out there, I was thinking about that old movie where that that guy started feeding that one plant that he had blood, and then that plant finally gets big, and I think at one point finally eats him.
Oh, that's Little Shop of Horrors.
Yeah, that's the one. Yeah,
well, I've got
Attack of the Killer Tomatoes, man.
They reckon that in the Republic of Ireland, the water supply that you drink shouldn't have more than about 0.5 parts per million of fluoride in the water. This has, for topical application only, not for ingestion, 1,475 parts per million.
Man.
So, yeah, just spit or swallow.
Anyway, that's nasty. Look.
Your mind is working, mate, not mine. I made a perfectly legitimate comment there.
Alright, well, anyway, there's a lot better ways to do a lot of things out there, and we're not trying to claim that we know it all or anything like that, but I think the combined knowledge of all the different brilliant individuals out there in this world could actually resolve some problems out there. You know, a lot of the radio stations went by the logo Seeking Solutions and Making the World a Better Place and that kind of stuff. But it's going to take the average Joe to get out there and actually take these ideas and run with them to actually do something to make this world a better place. And until you stop feeding the beast that's eating us all alive, you know, the congressmen and the senators and all the presidents and representatives of the world, they're going to say or do whatever they can say or do long enough to get themselves into that seat of power. And then only to turn around and start depleting your rights yet even more. And so that's the ridiculousness of that whole mess right there. And so if you want to get, you know, something done in this world, first off, you got to stop paying the doggone people that are the special interest that are actually out there lobbying your representatives to do totally opposite of what it is that you want done. You know, the whole carbon emissions thing is the biggest thorn in my side, because it just drives me nuts every time somebody talks about global warming / climate change / climate disruption or whatever it's going to be next week when the math doesn't add up, or you got 20 inches of snow on your driveway. So with that said, a little bit of basic science, a little bit of common sense, we got every single piece of the puzzle necessary to literally turn this world around, make clean, fresh air. If you can get these knuckleheads to stop doing whatever they're doing up in the sky, trying to combat the so-called unicorn that's flying around frying all of our faces off, you know, or the hole in the ozone layer, that's a real hoot. So, you know, hey, whatever. Just like I said, if you're going to talk about it, if you're going to say that the world is burning up, the planet X is coming in, there really ain't much you can do about that, because if another planet hits ours, we're gone anyway. So, you know, whatever. But as far as what we can control, that they call man-made climate change, you know, If you're really worried about one form of carbon when everything on this world is pretty much carbon based, then you might want to use some of these technologies that are going to be clean renewable energy, such as hydrogen technology, and even what Raymond's working on right now, which is turning his generator into the most efficient engine possible, by taking what is normally wasted off of every internal combustion engine out there. What do you do with the heat off of that generator? You basically run it through a radiator and put it out into the system. All right, if anything's going to warm the planet up, it's everybody's generators running and all that waste energy going to waste. You know, use some heat exchange and cool that back down before it ever even hits the air. You see what I mean?
Yep.
So, you know, it's out there, folks. And just a little bit of common sense could go a long ways. We don't have an energy crisis, we got a common sense crisis.
There you go.
So, I'm not saying that everybody out there in this world is stupid, but like Raymond's explained the definition of ignorant many times, it don't mean that you're an idiot, it just means that you don't know about a certain thing. You know, and if the world is ignorant, we got problems. Because, you know...
Right here in River City. Oh,
yeah.
It is a problem, but there is a solution to that problem. The solution is simply educate people, and that's exactly what we're trying to do on the show.
Yep. That's the whole point of it. It isn't for us to sit around and try to glorify our intelligence or anything like that. It's to sit around because we see what's going on in the world. We can think ahead, you know. We can see what's coming down the pipe. And if they say that certain bad things are coming down the pipe, which we don't agree with, but yet we got a solution for it and they're not listening, who's the hypocrite there? Is it us for giving the idea out there, or is it them for ignoring the idea?
There you go.
You know, that's the point. And, you know, I want to see my kids grow up in a decent world, and they can't grow up in a decent world as long as there's, like, wars and rumors of wars and plagues and famine and pestilence and all the craziness that goes on with it. And, you know, when the modern-day kids growing up looking like they fell face-first into a tackle box and being a foul-mouthed heathen can't say one thing nice to anybody, and even in jest or whatever, Man, I tell you what, I sit around listening to some of the kids talking about a day or so back, and I couldn't believe. I could count on, I ran out of fingers and toes, and I need to break out a calculator to actually keep up with how many times the F-bomb and the S-bomb were dropped in the conversation. I mean, come on. You know, hey, if I hit my toe with a hammer, I'm probably going to drop one of those. All right, but in respectful conversation or trying to lead by example, I'm going to try to be as respectful as possible that I can to everybody out there. You know what I mean? It's not that I'm trying to be a hypocrite or anything like that, because we're all human. We all do that kind of stuff. But just in your conversations alone, words are powerful, you know? And they got to fix out. You know, I used to say that if it only takes a firecracker, I use a nuke. And that's essentially what people do in their conversations right out of the gate. They got a nuke after nuke after nuke, you know. Oh, effing this and effing that, and I got this effing car, and it goes effing fast and effing, you know. And I'm like, what the heck, man? I know your car is fast.
Foul mouth even.
Yeah, you're brutalizing me.
Foul language is nothing more than the efforts of a sin-sick mind trying to express itself forcefully.
Yeah, I mean...
I think it's a lack of imagination. If you can't creatively insult somebody, don't bother.
Yeah, you got your point across when you said the car was fast.
Right.
You know? Either way, that's just a little... All these are just... They don't even scratch the surface of what's actually upside down about this world. You know, there are so many possibilities, so many potentials. We're sitting here in the year 2016, and we're still talking about alternative energy. Man, we should be flying around in Jetson-style cars by now. It ain't like the technology isn't available, but guy wants to sell crude oil. He's got trillions of gallons of crude oil, and it keeps coming. He can't pump it fast enough because it's still coming out. You know, and they keep talking about how we're going to run out of oil, so the gas prices keep spiking. You know, there's an oil crisis. Ain't no oil crisis. Even during the hardcore oil crisis back in the 70s, they had ships off to the port there that couldn't come in because they were full of crude oil. They didn't have no place to put it.
I saw that with my own eyes.
Yeah.
Four abreast, 100 yards between each one. As far out to sea as the human eye could see. So, I mean, there was no oil shortage. The ships were lined up waiting to be emptied.
Well, that's why Gibraltar doesn't want to leave the EU, mate. They've got about 200 petrol tankers sitting up there.
Yeah. And here's the thing, man. The Earth is one massive thermal electric generator of epic proportions. A self-contained biosphere that takes every single thing. If you ain't using it, nature will recycle it. It'll take it back. The nature will send in the bugs, the mold, the mildew, the rain, whatever, and it'll wash it away. Go watch that video series, 500 Years After Man. It's as if man wasn't even there because nature done dissolved everything that we put together. And so with that said, you can't run out of crude oil because there's so much carbon-based life forms on here. There's heat, there's pressure, there's everything necessary to literally build what they classify as fossil fuel, which I say is the biggest misnomer in the history of time, and then some. But no matter what's going on, this Earth is continuously recycling itself. It's continuously renewing itself. And if you're living in an area that's so incredibly toxic, move out of that area, let nature do what nature does best, and then come back in there, and everything will be fine. Go look at Chernobyl. That was one of the examples you guys mentioned. And they said you couldn't go back in there for hundreds of thousands of years or whatever, because it'd be so radioactive, it just, you wouldn't be able to go there. Well, the guy that goes monster fishing in the river all the time, he went fishing down there by Chernobyl. And as he's going through there showing everything, it looked good. There was birds and bees and fish and all that kind of stuff. You know, nature done cleaned the house. And so,
and it hasn't even been 100 years.
Yeah. And over there in Hiroshima and Nagasaki, where the two first atomic bombs were exploded, there's thousands of people living in both of those places. You know, I personally stood there in 1984 at the museums at Ground Zero. I'm still here. You know? You know, I ain't saying that there isn't radioactive danger to radioactive materials such as what they use for heating up water to do the, steam generation. But what I am saying is there's a whole lot that they're not telling you about. You know, go watch the video Galen Windsor nuclear scare scam, and it'll give you a different view on things, of possibilities of what is actually going on in the nuclear industry. You know, nature has the capability of balancing itself out, and if you allow nature to do what nature does best, then nature will clean house. You know, we just keep messing it up, and it's kind of like that doggone deal I say about a fish, a goldfish. If a goldfish is peeing and pooing in his own water, then eventually that water is going to become so acidic and the alkaline is going to burn the gills of the fish, and the fish ain't going to be able to breathe, and it's going to go belly up, and then you give it that moment of silence right before you reach over and pull that handle on the toilet. You know? And so, make sure you take your hat off. If you would have took and refreshed that water every so often for that fish, you know, a little bit of that water, keeping it clean, keeping that alkaline down, that goldfish would have lived a long, healthy, and productive life.
Or just flush it before it died, and it probably would have survived a lot better.
Yeah, it probably would have worked its way
eventually,
down.
Eventually come back and eat one of your kids.
Yeah.
It's like 16 feet long.
Yeah, like the alligator movies where they flush an alligator down into the sewer.
Yeah, run around the sewers.
Yeah. But anyway, that's what I'm trying to say. You know, look, I don't want people going over to war. I don't want people sending our children over to fight with other people's children and killing each other off. You know, and I'm always saying the whole peace, hope, and love, and can't we all just get along? But it's not a one-man deal. It's a every man, woman, and child deal. You're going to have to spread that peace, love, and can't we all just get along around there? And if you want something done and you're relying on some sort of representation or somebody else to do it for you, you're going to be seriously disappointed, because 9 times out of 10, every one of your friends and family is going to sit on the couch while they watch you do the work, and then they're going to want to share in the rewards of that cake or cookies that you make. And you know, it's like, hey, anybody want to help out with these dishes or something?
who helped sow the seeds? Oh,
yeah.
Nobody. Who helped, you know, grind the mill? Oh, nobody. Who helped bake the bread? Oh, nobody. Who wants to help me eat some bread? Oh, everybody. Well, guess what? Nobody gets it. I'm eating it.
Yeah.
I made the whole thing. None of y'all get any of it. You had a chance to help. None of you had a broken leg. None of you get. if I give anybody that hasn't helped me do this, it'll be the people that couldn't help, like the people down the street. I'm going to go down there and feed that bum on the corner of the street that's got a mental disease, and that's why he's living on that street corner. You guys could have helped. He couldn't.
Yep, that's the point, man. So, you know, these folks that can sit out there and complain, you know, and, you know, occupy this or occupy that, you know, and they basically go in and trash up their own neighborhoods, that's not making a positive influence. And they're actually protesting individuals who have the authority in their minds, at least, that they have the right to hurt somebody or imprison them. So you're going to go protest the government, who in turn is going to tell you you have to protest in this little area over here. But yet, if you get too far out of hand or outside of that area, then they send in those guys with the black suits and guns who will either pepper spray you, beat you toothless, haul you off and imprison you. And instead of protesting those, you should have been out and protesting the source of their voice, which was the actual mainstream media who was spreading the propaganda that allowed these turkeys to get elected to begin with. You know, stand on the media's lawn. The media's always the one saying to the police that the police are corrupt and violent and getting everybody all riled up. And so when you're standing on the media's lawn protesting them, why are you spreading propaganda for this corrupt government? And then whenever they call up those same police that they done just demonized, saying that they were racist, hate-filled abusers, and police might think twice before they come rushing to the rescue of the mainstream media, who already told them that no matter how they're out there risking their lives to save everybody or trying to keep the peace, the mainstream media is sitting there talking about them like they're trash. Now, you think about that for a second. You know, you want the police on your side or you want them on the government side? And right now, they're on the government side because you're out there acting like a fool, trashing up your neighborhood, burning your own deals over there in Ferguson. They burned down their own doggone community. They destroyed their own neighbors.
Sounds a little bit like what you're saying is when you go to protest, you should go go riot and destroy the mainstream media's place so that way the police won't show up to do anything, because they're like, nah, man, they were talking trash about us.
Well, that's...
We got these donuts that need rescuing first. We'll be by after we get done with that.
Yeah. And you don't have to go over and destroy...
There is a unit within 30 minutes of your area. As soon as one's available, we'll send it.
Yeah. You don't have to go over and destroy their news station. You don't want to mess up their camera because you want people to see you're standing on their lawn and the police ain't showing up because of what was said about them. Yeah, basically, you know, when these folks see you standing in front of them, now it's a whole different story. Now it's not a tinfoil hat wearing conspiracy. Now it's right there in their face. And you're not out there burning down your neighbor's business, who now you're later on going to wish you hadn't have done, because now you can't get a job. And what kind of company is going to go into a community that has been known to riot and burn down the businesses out there? What kind of insurance company is going to reinsure a business for any damages if they already had to pay out multiple times from prior incidents where the community got riled up because they were told by the mainstream media that there was some racist cops in the neighborhood, and so they went and instead of dealing with the cops in the court of law or dealing with the propaganda spreaders, which was the mainstream media, dealing with them directly, they went and took it out on their own people, man. You see what I mean? Go out there and protest Save the Trees with a wooden stick and a paper sign. I'll be the one looking at you with a crazy eye. That's what I gotta say. So, I gotta catch my breath. Anybody else?
You know, I don't know if this goes along with what you and Thomas just said, but it reminded me of this senior citizen who got up in the middle of the night, needed a glass of water, went to the kitchen, and before he turned the light on, he looked out the window and he noticed that his garage door was not only up and wide open, but the lights were on and there were three men carrying stuff out of his garage and putting it in their pickup truck. So he picked up the phone right there in the kitchen, called the police, and told them, I'm being robbed. I need to get a police car here fast. And the police officer on the phone told him, said, well, I can't send somebody right now. It'll be about 15, 20 minutes before we get somebody there. We don't have any patrol cars available. So the guy hung up the phone, waited about a minute and a half, called the police back, said, oh, by the way, I'm the guy that told you that three people are robbing my garage. You can take your time to send the police car, because I just shot all three of them. He hung up the phone. In 2 minutes, 5 police cars and 12 police officers showed up.
Yeah.
Surrounded the place. The police officer that came in the house, well, they caught the crooks, and the police officer come up and knocked on the door, and he answered. He said, "You do realize that telephone call to get the police here is a crime, and we can arrest you for that." And he said, "Wait a minute, I thought you told me you didn't have any patrol cars available."
Yep, there's a point example right there. Yep. Right. These folks out there are going to prioritize.
Yeah. The question is, well, you know, is it what kind of a crime is it to tell somebody that you can't help them when you're paid to help them,
exactly.
And you actually can help them?
Exactly.
It just wasn't important enough at the time until it was mentioned that somebody's
like
going to get shot.
And donuts that were being rescued down the road at the coffee shop, man.
That's the other thing as well. I mean, if you told them a donut truck had tipped in the ditch, they would have been down there like a bullet.
Well,
hey, I did see a bit of karma the other day, though. A guy on a moped jumped off, grabbed this woman's handbag and ran off. So she jumped on his moped and ran off and all. Yeah, a Louis Vuitton knockoff that you bought in the market for a tenner with some junk in the bottom of it doesn't value the same as a moped. And
yep.
She drove it straight to the police station, handed it over, and said, "I want my handbag back when he comes to collect it."
I love it. Well, that's the thing you've got to do, man.
Since we're telling jokes, I got one.
No, that wasn't a joke. That was a real deal. I saw the video.
It's a real deal, but it sounds like a joke, okay?
Mm.
A guy was speeding down the highway in Georgia, doing about 90 miles an hour. State trooper fell in behind him. He just floorboarded it. Next thing you know, him and a state trooper running 130, 140 miles an hour. Before you know it, the guy runs out of gas, pulls over the side of the road. State trooper gets out, walks over, and says, "Sir, if you can give me a good excuse why you were going so fast, I will write you a ticket." He said, "Sir, last month my wife ran off with a state trooper, and I thought you were him trying to bring her back."
All right, well, that's pretty bad. You don't want your wife back. Anyway, so moving right along, essentially, you're going to have to hold your elected representatives accountable for all the stuff that they've done. And if you allow them to do what they've been doing all this time, you're going to expect a world like we got right now. Nobody respects each other with the exception of a bunch of decent few that are out here trying to throw positive pebbles in the pond to send the ripples of peace, hope, and love out to the world and put some common sense back on the table. You know? And so with that said, that's what the Knights of the Round Table is all about. It's an open microphone for you to come on this show and start talking to people about it. As long as you can do it without being a foul-mouthed heathen every 5 seconds. Even more, every 1 second, for that matter. I heard that.
Man, what's with all these restrictions?
Restrictions?
You can't tell me what to do.
it's
Don't you oppress me. I've a right to have babies and call myself Loretta.
Well,
even if I haven't got a womb.
To each his own, but we might be talking to granny, we might be talking to somebody's children, you know, kid might be in the room, and as far as I'm concerned, if you're gonna lead, the world and make it a better place, you gotta lead by example, and if you're sitting there bleepity bleep bleep and bleep, you can't holler at the kid when the kid repeats what you just said. Kids are like little cameras, man. They walk around and they take pictures and listen. And, you know, if Pete and Repeat were in a boat and Pete fell out, who'd be left? That kind of deal. You know?
You mean like the African grey parrot?
Yeah.
A woman murdered her husband, kept repeating to the police, "Don't shoot me! Don't shoot me!" Get what you wish for, right?
Yep. And so there you go, man. You know? I'm just saying, if you want this world to be a better place, it's up to you. It's up to me. It's up to everybody. And we can't sit around and point the finger, you know, it was this secret government agency or this secret society over here that's at fault. They did it. Well, by consent, you allowed them to do it because there's 9 billion people on this planet, a lot of which are starving to death, a lot of which are dying in wars that are unnecessary, unjustified, not even legal, you know, and I could go on and on about it. You know, the fuel industry out there is making money hand over fist. The energy, basically the power companies are making money hand over fist. The governments are making money hand over fist. The military industrial complex is making money hand over fist. The medical industry is making money hand over fist. Your Walmarts are making money hand over fist. All these corporations out there that you complain about on a regular basis are making money hand over fist, and they're doing it all at your expense with your consent, because you take their monopoly money and you go over and buy from this company over here that may be buying from people down here that either are polluting their waterways or abusing their young people. You know, whatever, 50 cents an hour might be a good, even 50 cents a day might be a good wage down in a third world country. What makes them any different than the American sitting over here being able to make $12-$15 an hour or more? You see what I'm saying?
Tom, one of the things I've met with a lot of the countries I've been in Asia, which are perhaps not politically correctly called third world countries, but developing nations, is they don't send their grandparents to a special home where they rot and die. They keep them with them, and they live a lot longer.
Yep.
Because family is important.
You can learn a lot from people like that, because they know what it means to sacrifice. They know what it means to do without, and whenever they get something, they really respect the fact that they are fortunate enough to have it. And you got individuals out here that feel like they are so entitled to everything in this world. Like the politicians are a prime example. A politician isn't going to send his son or daughter into harm's way unless their son or daughter wants to go into harm's way and does it without their consent or whatever. But for the most part, go back and look at all the people that's been at the top in the positions of power and see how many of their children were sent off to come back from war with missing arms and limbs and PTSD and diseases or whatever, you know. Look about how the elite of the world have actually, how many of their children are sent into those zones. They're sent to nice colleges, maybe to a lesser military force, and they're actually basically pampered throughout life and bred to be future congressmen or senators and living in mansions and stuff like that. And then whenever they see something in the world, they might do like a charity drive. Like, one of the things that aggravated the heck out of me, I don't know how many times, is watching some rich actress get on TV and tell you about some poor child over there that you need to send your money to because that poor child's starving to death. When she's done with that doggone commercial, she's not only going to get paid for doing that commercial, but she's actually going to basically go back to her luxury life via her limousine or whatever. If it was me, I would take every doggone dime I had to try to resolve that issue to get them folks that needed food, or else otherwise I would feel bad about trying to tell people of lesser financial standing that they need to send their money. You see what I mean? If you got people they call working poor in America, you got people that they classify as working poor, too. A mother and a father going out working while their children is in the hands of the indoctrination center, which is essentially the new babysitter, or the TV set, which is the new babysitter, or even a potential child daycare center or babysitter that you pay for that might not have your child's best interest at heart. So the parents aren't raising the children. Society's raising the children, or whoever friends they hang around is raising the children. You see what I'm saying? Well,
in finishes, I'm a professor of creative profanity, and I am the reason in the flesh why people should not use a PlayStation 3 as a babysitter for their kids. And I'm proud of it.
You know, first-person shooter games. That's going to teach your kids some morals. Yeah. I mean,
you can run around, stab people in the face, shoot them in the head, blow them up with all sorts of varieties of creative weapons, but you say one rude word, and it's offensive.
You know what's really ironic about what you just said, retarded? Steve? What's really ironic about what you just said, there are individuals out there who will curse the gaming industry because of all the violence that's in the gaming industry, yet they will put cartoons in front of their children that are violent as well. They'll put cartoons that promote witchcraft or magic or whatever, you know. And
well, like Tom and Jerry.
Yeah, not even complain about it. And then there's a segment of society that will complain about Tom and Jerry, but then turn around and basically, promote via their companies or whatever, violent video games. So practice what you preach. Don't talk out the side of your neck. If you ain't acting the way that you're teaching, then you're basically just talking it. You know what I mean?
Well, to this, I'm English. Twice we've been to Belgium to have a punch-up with the Germans, but this time we just said no. So that's three World Wars and one World Cup we've won so far. So up yours, Belgium. Now,
oh, man.
I mean, going back to what we were saying about respecting your elders earlier, I was reading through the comments after England decided that, no, it didn't fancy jumping to the crack of the whip of four presidents that nobody had elected. So there was a bunch of whiners between the ages of 18 to 30 saying, oh, I guess I won't go to university in Barcelona now. Why not? I haven't lived in England for 24 years. I left there in 1992. And I crawled around on a field in Holland in the middle of winter, putting bowls out the ground with my bare hands. And I had some guy that was 6'6" standing behind me saying, this is not a holiday. I thought, you were joking, mate. This really is a holiday. But why are you whining? Because people in their 50s, who've actually lived a bit and have got some level of common sense, have said, no, I don't want my grandchildren growing up in a world where you've 96 resolutions from the European Union on what constitutes a teaspoon.
Yeah.
Give me a break, lads. This is not about free travel. This is not about working or studying in any other part of Europe. It's about a bunch of kleptocrats that have sat there and built this massive overhanging piece of civil service legislation where their only purpose in life is to kill trees.
Yep.
And then they sit there and whinge about global warming. It's not surprising, lads, really.
Well, but you know how...
What we have to understand is that people that we cannot elect and we cannot remove are not accountable to us. And if it's going back to the old days in England when I was young, when I got paid £1.25 an hour to clear cups in a coffee shop, and the owner was whining because he had to buy himself a Porsche to avoid tax.
Say, there's a question down in the chat room. I'm not necessarily understanding what's actually being asked there. It says, what is it?
I've got 30 seconds left.
Oh, okay, sorry.
Let's just say that if we're going to get shafted by the UK government in the UK, they have to walk down the same streets as us. But when they're located in Brussels, they do not care.
Yeah, I get it. Anyway, I'm not understanding this question. Maybe one of you guys, they said, what is the phase shift between electrical E and musical E?
It's never really occurred to me.
I'll have to contemplate on that and see what's up.
Yeah, that's kind of an interesting question that I don't have an answer for, but I think I'd actually like to find out.
E equals energy. Well, in if you're talking about like an acoustic wave off of a guitar string, there's an energy wave, and that energy wave can actually be captured and utilized. It's what the pickups on the guitar does, is when that wire is vibrating back and forth through that magnetic field of that pickup, it actually causes pulses that then in turn go down to your amplifier and is amplified into what we call music, or if you're a really terrible guitar player, what we call noise. So,
what we call Skank Duck.
Yeah, Skank Duck, the band. Look them up, they're on YouTube. Anyway, So
what is that, Scar?
No, that's apocalyptic.
An awesome rock band.
Anyway, yeah. So we got all these answers out there, and we're trying to rally the troops. We're trying to rally the brilliant minds. We're actually trying to build the dream team. And the dream team is this. It's those folks out there like yourself that have done research on particular subjects. See, each one of us, we got a lot of knowledge in certain subjects, but we don't have knowledge in every single subject. So you put us all together, and then we can start telling you how things work. You put some more pieces of the puzzle to it, then you start getting the big picture. And so with that said, in the alternative energy, I look at energy in a mechanical view, and so I see how it functions, and I can explain to the best of my ability as simple as I can so people can understand it, how energy actually travels. And so with that said, what Raymond's doing with his new project that he's working on is basically taking this internal combustion engine and making it run more efficiently than it was designed to right out of the factory, because the potential's there. You know, you change the way the fuel delivery goes into the system, you make it burn more efficiently, and even at some point when you're throttling that thing up, you're going to get that piston and everything going inside there so fast that you're going to even have to cut back the fuel yet again in order to use it even more efficient. So there's going to be, at some point, there's going to be a limit of how far you actually have to cut it back and how far that engine can actually go or whatever. But regardless, just by doing what he's doing and taking that fuel into a vapor, you're going to take less fuel the more efficiently you burn that fuel, if you understand what I'm trying to point out here. So, basically we get all these brilliant people that have researched tons of stuff. We put them at the table, around the round table. There's no leader here, even though King Shaziz the Terrible rules with an iron fist and won't let you foul mouth on his show.
Yeah, I know, said nothing profane about Brussels.
Yeah, I know. You said it respectfully.
Yeah, right. Merkel, she's the solution to sexual emergencies in German swimming pools. Stick her in a bikini and nobody's going to bother anybody.
Oh, man, that's going to put a bad visual in my brain that I'll never get out.
I'm sorry.
All right, so...
There's different levels of profanity, isn't it?
Somebody said, think you have been drinking the bong water again, mate?
Yeah, that was me.
Oh.
It is a good question, in fairness, because what is the frequency modulation of the release tension on the string?
Well, actually, it could be measured, you know, with an oscilloscope and some audio equipment. You could actually measure that frequency. And even when from the first time you strum that string, it's at its highest point down to when it finally winds itself down to its lowest point, there's multiple frequencies involved in that one pick of the guitar string. You see what I'm saying?
Oh, definitely. Because I mean, I've studied the live bands before and I've felt energized.
Yeah, from its highest point all the way down to when it finally winds itself down. There's so many different frequencies in that range, right in that range. It's like a radio station, you know. It's 98.9 all the way up to 100. There's so many frequencies in between there, it's just mind-boggling. You know, if you get too close to a specific frequency, you could actually have a bleed over, you know. Minor, if you understand what I'm saying. If you ever messed with your radio dial and you actually heard like another station kind of like in the background of that radio station, you see what I'm saying? Those waves are almost carrying each other over because of how much power that they're using, the 50,000 watt radio station too close in the same vicinity as another radio station that is really close to the same frequency, almost like a carrier wave. Does that make any sense? Well, y'all left me out to dry. I heard the crickets going.
No, I'm just arguing with Justin because he's trying to get wordy again.
And nobody left, man, because we've all been ran over by the bus so many times that, you know.
Oh, well,
we don't even have lips to talk with.
Is there any oil
laying on the ground bouncing around like little slugs.
Is there any oil leaks down there?
Whenever I see a bus coming, I always throw myself to the side so I can have the last word.
Well, throw me under the bus once in a while then.
Yeah, but you're the one that drives it, Shizzy.
Oh, well. Hopefully I'm not driving us over a cliff.
No, I wouldn't have thought so, mate, because we would have been crashing down that ravine a very, very long time ago.
Yep, because mine's is like all those extremes. If it's going to be bad, I want it to be real bad. If it's going to be good, I want it to be real good. All right, that way you got something, you got a real story to tell your grandchildren. You remember that time when you was driving the bus? No, I forgot all about it. Selective memory. Anyway, so basically the Knights of the Round Table has invited people to the table so many times. There's like 100 and, I don't know, I gotta go look. Anybody know how many doggone podcasts are up there on the Knights podcast page? I don't remember. Anyway, there's a lot of podcasts.
A long time, mate. A long time.
Yeah, and on the Knights of the Round Table and on the Mad Science, there's lots of podcasts, and there's lots of brilliant people that came onto those radio shows and put out a lot of good ideas for a lot of people. Take those ideas and run with them. Learn how to garden, learn how to do things, learn how things work, and basically do like Raymond said, and educate yourself as much as humanly possible. The more you know, the better. They say knowledge is power, and I agree. And if you want to take the power back in your own communities, you got to do like Thomas mentioned multiple times and network with one another. Bring all the brilliant people from your communities. You got somebody who can weld. You got somebody who's good at construction. Somebody who's good at organizing. Somebody who's good at cook. Maybe an entertainment portion. Somebody who could sing or play some music and get together and make a party of it. Do it like an old barn raising ceremony and build you up a lab and start doing some research and actually building some of the things that we've talked about. Watch Raymond's video on how he's going to make this engine more efficient by changing the way that the fuel is delivered to the system. And take off all the what would normally be classified as waste in any industry, whether it be the food industry or, you know, whatever. Everything can be recycled. Nature's been doing it since the dawn of time. Since this planet got here, nature is the best recycler in the history of time. Watch what nature does. Learn from what nature does. And if you can't find free energy, you're simply not looking hard enough for it. Because somewhere
well,
in this world...
Well, if I have to stop you there.
Yeah?
Because nature can recycle lots of things. But only a hedge fund can spend the same thing twice, 5 times, 10 times. And claim his tax back on it 14 times.
Well, then essentially aren't they recycling the fraud?
Pretty much, but they're a hell of a lot more efficient than Mother Nature.
Yeah, but if you can pass the same joke off to the same people over and over again, whose fault is it? Yours for repeating yourself or the guys for falling for it every time?
Well, I blame it on the education system. We don't learn from our mistakes.
Yeah, there you go. And so anyway, basically nature is a good teacher, and you guys and gals out there are good teachers. All you got to do is share what you've learned. Share, you know, Steve, you said it a million times on this show that we literally have before our fingertips the vast sum of all humanity's knowledge. We're setting at a golden time in history to where we have access to knowledge that we otherwise wouldn't have got. Because think about the modern day school without the internet. The modern day school without the internet is nothing more than an indoctrination / propaganda center, and you believe what you're told. The teacher said you did this, so that's what we did. You know what I mean?
Well, Shaziz, you do know that beer saved the world.
Probably.
There was something like 2 million gallons of beer that were paid in salaries to build the Great Pyramid. The first ever refrigeration unit was designed to refrigerate beer. Way back in cuneiform, they found a tablet about, I think it was a couple of thousand years before they started planting barley for crops.
that had 160 words relating to the production of beer on it. If it wasn't for beer, they wouldn't have actually used mathematics, because they wouldn't have had to calculate how many square acreages of barley they needed to actually grow to make beer. So I think we should all be quite proud of the fact that, you know,
well,
we have something that's caused so much joy in people's lives, even though it had negative consequences.
Would I be totally off base by saying the hippies invented the peace? Because they got so stoned that they were just like, want to sit around, hey man, peace, but can we all just get along?
I always wanted you to be Philip from the Magic Roundabout. I did. That guy was cool.
Anyway.
Didn't care.
Sometimes you got to laugh in the face of adversity or life will get you down. I mean, there's a lot of things that's gone on. You know, my lab being trashed and all that kind of stuff. I can just, you know, lay down and give up, but I'm not. Duct tape and baling wire, keep it going, and you know, I'll get me a better lab going on, and hopefully this dome that I want to build gets put together, and you know, I'll show everybody from start to finish how to make that dome self-sufficient, where it has its own water, it has its own heating and electrical, everything, cooling, all that.
I'm going to be there before you will, and I'm going to be growing fish, and I'm going to be growing food.
Well, there you go, man. And I'll learn from what you do, and you'll help me in that part where, you know, this thing will have its own food system in it. It'll have its own water supply. It'll have its own heating and cooling and lighting, you know, and everything using everything
around.
I'm going
to put a disco glitter ball in mine.
Huh?
I'm going to put some disco glitter ball in mine and a shag pole carpet all the way from the middle.
Well, you better not say that too loud or John Travolta's going to come over to want to dance in your living room.
Well, I'll tell you what, that will be some opening ceremony. My living room is polytunnel, mate. Me don't. I've got an idea to build a 40-foot wide, 20-foot high geodesic dome that when the wind starts blowing at 100 miles an hour, instead of having a massive force onto one location, I'm going to put dirty great big fins on it and try and make it spin and turn it into the most obnoxious electrical generator you've ever seen.
Cool. I like the way you think.
Well, think about it. You build a 2-foot-high brick wall or a solid brick concrete wall. You rest your dome on the top of it in a groove so it can rotate, keep it nice and well lubricated, which the rain will probably do anyway. But when that wind starts hitting it in an area where you have something like 20 typhoons a year, instead of tipping it over and blowing it over, you make it rotate so you don't have the force on one area of the structure consistently enough to break it. You put a turbine and a couple of chains or pulleys in the center.
That's beyond brilliant. That's incredibly brilliant. I mean, whoever would have thought about using the dome itself as a turbine to run your dog? That's genius, Steve.
Yeah, but it's the same as a windmill.
Yeah.
They use windmills in Holland to pump water out of the dikes to reclaim the sea land.
And all...
use windmills to grow corn.
In all reality, you could also put solar involved in on that situation to, you know, basically rotate solar panels around... as that dome is spinning because of the wind. See, one of the things that makes solar panels less efficient is when they get really hot. So what if you were taking and revolving these solar panels and basically putting one into the sun, it goes around the back, it's cooling itself down, the next one comes in line, and it doesn't even lose a stride in the process. It's still all going in the same energy bank. So now you got this spinning roof that is also recycling the solar panels to keep them from getting too hot. They would be super efficient.
Thomas just came up with something the other day. He was telling me how if you took plants and put them on a turnstile, a large round turnstile, and turned them very slowly, that they would actually grow faster. Thomas, are you there?
That's true. Centrifugal force strengthens the actual tissues of the plant itself.
So you can... Well, they're using... They rotate perpendicular to the Earth's surface, though. So the plants are being basically turned upside down and then back upside right very slowly throughout the day, causing the stems to get pulled on at different angles with the gravity. Wow. And my idea to improve what they were doing, because you know for some plants they get pretty tall, so for you to build a turnstile that can basically handle that tall of a plant, it has to be basically more than double the height of the height of the plant that's expected to come out of it. So you build something that you can manage, but you build it so that the wheel actually uses it's like a chain link system that the plants are held onto, that whenever they hit the middle, you pull them off and lay it out flat and roll the next one up on it and just kind of use it more to give them a boost.
So you're talking like a merry-go-round. That's a merry-go-round, but a Ferris wheel.
More like a Ferris wheel.
Yeah. Well, that's already been done.
Tom, I'm sorry to burst your bubble, but that was done quite a long time ago.
I was telling him about something somebody else had already showed me, and that was my solution to make it easier for you to use it, so you're not trapped in the wheel indefinitely. You have a really easy escape, so you can continue growing after that point.
Cool.
Because nobody had mentioned that in the solution he received.
One of the solutions that was presented quite a while back, actually, was to use old tractor tires, and you cut a groove in them, and you put a tray in them. In the tray you put lettuce, cucumber, tomato, all sorts of plants. And then you have a small motor at the bottom that turns that tractor wheel. And they go through a hydroponic solution as the wheel goes round. You have a bulb in the centre of the wheel. So it doesn't matter what position that plant's in. It's always getting the same kind of 360 degree radius penetration of lumens.
How fast is it? How many RPM?
Or maybe one or two. I mean, it's real slow. Literally, all you want to do is to make it fast enough so the plants don't dry out before they go for the hydroponic solution. But not so, they're so wet that it's going to damage plants that like a nice moist soil.
The one revolution every minute.
It's called the Volkswheel or something like that. They've got huge, great big factories full of the things where they've got. You know, you can press a button and it'll come out the side and drop down, and you've got five or six of them in. I did that on Shiz's radio a long time ago, Shiz's, didn't I?
Yeah.
Thomas, I mean, was saying turn the wheel vertically. You're saying turn it horizontally.
No, vertically, mate.
Vertically, okay.
Yeah.
But you want the plants stationary to where they're upside down when they're at the top, correct?
Yep. Okay. If you do it horizontally, then the plant's always going to lead in one direction. When you're doing it vertically, they're going to go through 360 degree motion, and it really does strengthen the plants.
Would a 10-foot diameter work?
Any diameter you want, really, mate. I mean, it depends on the strength of the bulb you're using in the middle. If you've got too strong a bulb, you have to wind it down if you've got a smaller tube, but if you've got a bigger tube, you can use a bigger bulb.
Yeah, my thought too on that was to basically just take straight piece of tubing, like a polycarbonate or acrylic or something, and you bend that thing at an angle so that basically the two ends of it are pointed straight up in the air, and then put a reflector around the end of it and fill the whole thing up with water. That way you can use sunlight to go ahead and pump through that that tube and reflect off on the plants. A little light sanding on the middle of the tube where it's running through the system would basically allow it to be pumped into the plants.
Don't need to, mate. Once your wheel's turning, to be perfectly honest, you don't want to overwater the plants. See, it's called the Volks Garden. If anybody hasn't seen it yet.
I think you missed the point of what I was talking about. We're not talking about watering the plants. We're talking about lighting the plants with sunlight. You know, like they do where they take a bottle and they stick it through a roof and seal it up and then fill it with water and a little drop of bleach, and the sunlight hits the top of the bottle and it lights the inside of the room.
Cool.
But instead you're pumping it all the way from wherever that tube starts down through the middle of the cylinder. Basically treating it like a fiber optic line.
Well, that's what they're doing in the Philippines, mate. They're taking a 1 liter Coke bottle and they're filling it full of bleach and water. Cut an hole in the tin roof and shoving a bottle through it, and it gives right. an equivalent of a 60-volt white light bulb. And I think we spoke about it before, didn't we? How far can you get that light to refract down inside?
I believe it's unlimited. If you're using fiber optics, using it like you would fiber optics, I believe that you could go zigging and zagging and all the way down into the basement and send that light in.
My question is, what do you do about the fact that light destroys bleach?
Use something else, mineral oil or some alcohol or something. I don't know.
Well, if you seal that system up, bleach is basically, its most important components are sodium and chlorine. And if you've got a high salinity level in that solution, even if it breaks it down and turns it into salt, it's still going to remain very destructive to any, mold or algae or anything like that, like that would block the light that would try to grow in the water, any bacteria. So you don't have, you're basically just trying to keep anything from growing in there.
So you could just start off with this salt, right?
Right. Just dissolve salt in the water.
You guys want to take a quick music break, or do you want to take a keep going while I go make a nature break?
Well, just very briefly, here's a comment. So the anodized salt is generally one chemical in it, whereas natural salts that I use for cooking with have up to 84 trace minerals. So you get some natural sea salt and you stick it on your tongue and you roll it around and it'll be there for a while and it won't bother you. But you get anodized table salt and you put it on your tongue, you can spit it out straight away.
Anodized? You mean iodized?
Yeah.
Iodized is not one compound, but it is manufactured, so it's not good for you.
Anyway, music break, guys.
Yeah.
All right, everybody, you're listening to the Knights of the Round Table. Stay tuned, and we'll come back and polish off the last 45 minutes of the show. So, peace and love. Stay tuned. everybody. You're listening to the Knights of the Round Table. Got Raymond on here, and Thomas, and Steve, and myself, and we had a brilliant conversation off air, just as well as we did on air. Sometimes the shows probably should go on even during break, with exceptions of certain subjects that get said. Anyway,
I'll put the fence back on, mate.
Yeah. Anyway, basically, we're talking about all kinds of things out here today, and one of the things that we were talking about off air, it just dawned on me and actually took away what I was actually getting ready to say before I came back. Raymond was talking about a toy where a guy on a unicycle goes down a string, and then he gets at the other end. All you gotta do is move that string up a little bit. But I was saying, why couldn't you set that system up to where he had a supercapacitor inside, and as he's pedaling down the string the first go, he's charging up a little capacitor that runs a little electric motor and pulls him back up to the top again. Why wouldn't that be beyond the realms of possibility? You ain't got to go far, right?
Right.
It's just another one of those ideas out there. That last song that I played on there, Flirting with Disaster, I kind of like that song because it reminds me of life in general. And essentially, that's what we're doing in life. We're flirting with disaster. Because with the lack of common sense going on and the way that people just are running amok and, you know, like I mentioned earlier, some of the kids, these modern day kids, look like they fell face first off into a tackle box. And, you know, maybe some of them's brilliant, but why they would want to put all that metal in their face, I hope they don't never plan on traveling like on an airplane anymore with the TSA and all them wanting to, you know, be all touchy feely and empty your pockets kind of stuff.
Oh,
man,
you don't want to
think about
that. That's cool.
Oh, Lord. Yeah. So, anyway, you know, that's just why, I guess, one of the modern day drawbacks just to society's decline, I guess. I don't know. To each his own. But if you're going to make this world a better place, it starts with you, you know. And if you want to set a good example for your kids, keep your face out of the tackle box.
There you go.
You know, that's simple as that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Somebody sent me a video, an email, I think it was my mother, and the subject line said, "And why can't you find a decent job?" And then all of a sudden it was pictures of these kids with tattoos. I mean, one guy had his face tattooed up where he looked like a cat, another one like a leopard, and another one like the devil, and all these piercings and tattoos and stuff, and then they wonder why they can't get a decent job.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Come on.
Yeah, were you about to say something, Steve?
I was, but I forgot what it was because it was really important.
Oh. Well, if it wasn't important, you would have remembered. Anyway,
yeah, it's irrelevant. You always put it back,
don't
you?
Yeah. Anyway, if it comes back to mind, just butt in there somewhere. You know, like Raymond just said, you know, I mean, I ain't going to criticize folks after you got tattoos and tackle box, basically fishing tackle all over their face or whatever, you know. But it's just an example, you know. I when I was younger, I got a tattoo, yeah, and I thought, oh, yeah.
Sorry, it's come back to me. I've a 1-year-old nephew, so I was thinking, what could I get my nephew over perhaps 21 years until he's old to go off and do his own thing that would be kind of cool? You know, what with Brexit, I've looked at Bitcoin, and I've looked at gold, silver, copper, palladium, platinum, even iridium, you know, all of these various different precious metals. But wouldn't it be kind of cool to get a little box? I mean, currently platinum and palladium are cheaper than gold, so it's kind of a good time to buy it. Get a small gold bar of all the precious heavy metals you can find, get one of each, and put the periodic chart in the top of the box and give it to him when he's 21, when he's going to college, and he'll sell it all and drink beer.
Cool.
But wouldn't it be great for the next future of mad scientists to at least have small amounts of all of the main heavy metals?
That's not a bad idea, man.
Palladium.
what was it like? You, I forgot what they're called now, but I mean, I had a whole list of stuff in my head. Actinium. You know, what could they do with the advances in science, technology, all the white papers that are going to be written in the next 20 years, all the mad science inventions? I mean, look at beryllium.
Well, you know, I kind of hope that sometime way, way in the future now, you know how we listen to old radio shows and old, look at old science, popular science magazines, and we see what they were talking about back in them days? I kind of hope that someday somebody will listen to some of these deals and, you know, think that what we did was, a good thing, you know? You know, what took people so long to listen to this crew of people that, come from all over the place, you know, talking common sense? You know, because right now, if you look at what's going on out there according to what you're being told, you know, you can go all the way back to the BP oil spill and the decisions that they made back there that now people are paying for in the modern day age. You can look at the Fukushima disaster or whatever and, you know, take it from there.
Yeah. Check out the Exxon Valdez.
Yeah. You know, there's not too many people alive of the cleanup crew, are there?
No.
So, basically, instead of doing like Raymond says, if you ignore history, you're bound to repeat it. Instead of repeating history over and over and making the same doggone mistakes, why don't we take all this knowledge that we have access to right now and resolve the problems before they ever even occur? You know, we know about lead, we know about asbestos and mercury and all that.
In fairness, the government approved asbestos.
Well, sure they did. But the government's
approved sunset yellow food colouring that was giving people rashes and seizures and all sorts of stuff. I ended up in the emergency ward with a drip in the arm because of red food colouring.
The Food and Drug Administration has approved a lot of things in the past that have turned out to be detrimental to your health, including off-the-shelf medicines or even medicines that you have to have prescription for. Because if you've ever read the list of possible side effects from some of these things, my God, I'd rather take my chances with the initial disease and some alternative medicine as opposed to risk liver cancer or liver disease or whatever. Not excluding death.
Shaziz, was that the Food and Drug Administration or was that the Food with Drugs Administration?
Probably the latter there, because what I've seen...
I can't learn myself.
Environmental Protection Agency dumps a whole bunch of crud down the river. Their response to the situation was, oh, well, you know, we'll clean this up and, you know, we'll take care of everything. Don't worry, we're sorry we did it or anything like that. No, they essentially told everybody, I'll wait for the crud to float by and then you can start drinking the water again. Seriously? Come on, man. You turn the doggone beautiful river orange with crud.
Yeah, but that's why you put your latrine downstream from your fish farm.
Well, yeah, but what about the person downstream that has their own fish farm?
It's like what Werner von Braun said. You know, where it goes up is my problem. Where it comes down is yours.
Yeah. So, like, more or less, to simplify it, sorry about your luck.
Yeah, you want it to go up. I don't care where it goes after that.
Anyway, you know, if we ain't going to be good caretakers of, you know, helping each other out downstream as well as upstream, you know, then we can expect to get what we got, you know.
I already told you, put my pants back on.
Thank God. I got a bad visual about all that, man. Oh, man. Okay, so...
You lost your train of thought now, haven't you?
Yeah, messed me up, man. Anyway, don't traumatize the old folks. And old folks don't be traumatizing the youth. Basically, get out there, learn as much as you can, help each other out, help the people who want peace to gain peace by stopping the wars out there and all the craziness. If we're fighting over oil, if that is, you know, that's one of the conspiracies out there, that all these wars in the Middle East outside of the jihad holy war that they're having with one another, if all of this is about resources such as oil, then it's flat out beyond ridiculous, because we don't even need crude oil. we got enough resources here on our land and your land to run everything that it is that we're running right now more efficiently than we ever did before without ever even using a drop of gasoline. You know? Basic science, man. The doggone hydrogen technology. It's completely overlooked these days, with exception of those out there who figured out that instead of using oxygen in the settling, they'll just build a hydrogen torch, and that hydrogen torch makes a better, cleaner cut, and you know, is less expensive. Instead of buying oxygen and acetylene, all they got to do is produce the hydrogen and use that to cut their metals and whatever, you know. So,
well, I can't say that I've ever managed to make a hydrogen generator that cut metal, but I did make one that worked out of beer cans.
Well, you made it out of beer cans, so you can expect that it's going to be, you know, only so efficient. But if you had the access to what these companies have that are making these industrial strength hydrogen generators, I mean, these are state of the art. These are taking the best of that technology. But even at that, knowing that technology is out there on the market and maybe highly expensive right now because, you know, it's like supply and demand. If everybody ain't wanting it, then, you know, it's a lot more expensive. You see what I mean? And so, with that said, it's not that the technology ain't there. It's just that your can one, you know, it's a simple version of what could be really seriously complex and highly engineered to be the perfect machine. We could do that with our cars. You know? You could take those, you can take those four wheels that are on your car, they're going to be rolling anyway, that are generating friction and heat and centrifugal force, and you could turn that into energy that could basically separate your hydrogen and oxygen on demand. That have you ever seen those doggone wheels they call spinners, like hubcaps, that whenever you get driving down the road, you stop and then the wheel keeps spinning?
Yeah.
That's a pretty cool piece of engineering, although I wouldn't want them on my car because they would kind of look ridiculous.
I'll tell you what, keeps the monkey's fingers out of it when you go to the wildlife park.
Yeah. But either way, there's still a piece of physics right there that goes on for, you know, something that is just basically used to for looks. But what's to stop you from turning that that spinning motion when the car stops into putting extra juice back into your battery? See what I mean? You get that car flying down the road and then you stop and then that thing, you know, it keeps going.
Well, Shaziz, do you remember a while back we were looking at the 350 farad supercapacitors?
Yeah.
That's a D-cell battery. I was kind of looking at that again recently. I mean, you put some sort of small little battery pack on the back of it as a backup.
Yeah.
Because they do lose energy over time. But I mean, as soon as this guy got his engine turned over, he was charging back up absolutely rapidly. I mean, it was going from 10 volts to 14 volts in a couple of minutes.
Well, that's the thing about these modern day supercapacitors that you're talking about. The charge and discharge rate are so you know, incredible these days. I mean, to say that you couldn't use them like batteries is ridiculous, because there's videos out there where a guy took six of those and replaced his what would have probably been a 20-pound battery into a 2-pound battery pack that he was starting a 4-cylinder engine with, and then the alternator would charge it back up, and then when he shut it off, it'd start again, and then he actually let it set for 3 days and went back and it fired up again. So, you know, what's to stop you from doing that on a bigger scale? The technology that Robert Murray Smith's working on, and I'm really excited about his car project that he's doing. I want to see how that comes out, but they're actually building an electric car that has four motors for the wheels. They're hub motors for the wheels, and they're going to do some pretty cool stuff with it. So I'm anxious to see how that, but it's not just that. It's his capacitor technology that he's working on as well, using graphene and such, that is going to be yet even more information on the table. See what I'm saying? It's all brilliant, I think, man.
I do believe the Muddy Man might be joining us very shortly.
Yay! Somebody add him to the call before he calls in and we get that little noise going on.
I already did, but he's gone again. Come back here. Oi, where do you think you're going? No rest of the wicked.
He always shows up at the last minute. He's like got banker's hours or something.
Yeah, well, if it's a bad penny, I hope it's one of those 1913.
Yeah, where was he? Where was he during all the hard work, such as all the brain power being expended here? So you could tap the energy coming off of our brains for some alternative electricity. What do you think?
I've piqued his interest with my immensely large fan blade. I've got to build it, yeah. I mean, I'll make it work. You're in there, Tom. Not Tom, sorry. My apologies, Tom.
Muddy,
where are you?
Let me see if I can add him.
You won't let me add him. He did come in, but he's gone out again for some reason.
Yeah, maybe it's on this Dave's used internet supply or service or whatever.
Up and down faster than a fiddler's elbow.
Honest Dave's used ISP service.
Oh, God. What do you do?
I know he's in there somewhere. There, I just see his picture pop in. Somebody put him in there. Buddy, are you there?
No.
Yes, you're a figment of my imagination.
You sound like you're underneath the bed or in a closet.
Oh. Yeah. Sorry, I don't have my regular microphone.
There you go, now you're back.
It's just the large one, then.
Sorry.
You missed all the fun, man.
Oh, I know it. I was sleeping like a baby. Sorry.
At least you got your beauty sleep.
Oh, I need that.
Hey, I need a bit of beauty sleep myself. I could probably use a week or two of it, you know. But it's not easy being a good-looking super genius, you know. It comes with a lot of responsibility. You can't just sling that stuff around because you can hurt someone. You got to use it in moderations, man.
I'm not allowed to sleep like a baby because when I wake up in the middle of the night screaming for food, I end up getting slapped.
Oh, man.
55 years of beauty sleep didn't help me at all. Trust me.
Yeah, well, I'm still catching up on mine.
Well, I'll tell you what, buddy, that's pretty good for a 36-year-old man.
Oh, yeah.
Yep. You slept 55 of your 36 years? Man.
What do you make up for lost time?
That's talent. Anyway, so we've put a lot of stuff out there on the table. We talked about a lot of solutions out there. Now it's up to you to grab those solutions and run with it. We need more people at the table. So if you're listening to this show and you want to join in and become one of the Knights of the Round Table, it's as simple as a Skype call. You know, we'll hang up on you and start being a foul-mouthed heathen. We won't play that round with you. But if you want to be respectful and put some positive influence and information out there, you're more than welcome to join us at the round table. Or if you just want to be one of the honorary knights, it's as simple as going in there in the chat room like Stephen Gibbons and all the other guests in there that are posting pertinent links to things and, you know, helping spread information and research and stuff. That's how we make this world a better place, you know?
Well, this, just a little bit of respect to Stephen Gibbons there. He's definitely a gold star contributor.
Oh, definitely. And he's put some really brilliant information out there. So, you know, with that said, thank you, Stephen, and thank you everybody else who's contributed to the chat room down there. We got not just one chat room, the superchat.html. You know, we got the access to over there to Awake Radio's chat room. You get two chat rooms in the price of one there, man. You get to talk to two different networks together. And the really nice folks over there at Awake Radio, and I suggest you go over there and you know, subscribe to their channels and stuff as well. You know, support all these networks. And even if it ain't these networks, go out there and support other alternative media networks because they're not the propaganda machine. Even though some of them out there, you know, get a little on the crazy side, you know, it's alternative messages. It's alternative media. Anything besides the beast that is the system that's eating us alive or the system of the beast that's eating us all alive, you know, put some alternatives on the table, give people more choices. That's the simple of it. And if you want to fix something, there are somebody out there You know, go talk to Muddy about axial flux wind turbines. Go talk to Thomas about anything chemistry, machine related, that, or even computer related as far as that goes. Talk to Steve about that. He's done things like that. He knows about aquaponics and stuff, and Raymond's got all kinds of different things that he contributes to the mix as well. If you want to know anything about alternative energy, give me a call. You know, I'll share everything that I've learned throughout the time I've been researching. And so that's how it works. All these different pockets of information that have been gathered and, you know, the wonderful people that join up in the chat room and share information there as well. You know, if you ain't learned nothing on Shaziz Radio, then you're probably not going to learn anything anywhere else. Because that's what we're doing here, is we're trying to, you know, share things that we've learned, and hopefully you learned something, and in the process, you probably taught us a few things. We don't know it all.
Well, I'll teach you one thing, Chizzis. If you start messing around with those radioactive elements, you're going to look a hell of a lot more like Lex Luthor than you do Einstein.
Well, then, brother, if I'm glowing in the dark, at least maybe I won't stub my toe on the coffee table anymore.
Yeah, it's okay, yeah. The coffee table ain't glowing. I tried it.
Yeah, well, I, you know,
one of those people who can, he's one of those people that, you know, he's the only one that you can ask certain questions to. Like, how much hairspray does it take to get that Einstein hair, hairdo?
Have you ever seen my video Glowing in the Dark?
No, I didn't.
Have you ever get a chance to go look at that? It's a video I did a long, long time ago, because people told me if I kept messing around with electricity, I'd be glowing in the dark.
Oh, was that the one with the LED Mankini?
No. But maybe I'll have to try that one. Hey, it couldn't be any worse than how to properly panic during global warming.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. You use balloon static to light up those LEDs, and that would be very interesting.
Yeah. And it's that's a lot easier than you think it'd be, especially during certain times of the year when static charges are already in the air, you know. So run around rubbing your feet on the carpet, lighting up your LED mankini. With a smiley face on it.
No, no.
You're killing me.
Hey, it's all in the name of mad science, man. You know,
I don't know about that. I think it'd be people would be furious with that.
They'd never get that visual out of their head. Everything would be glowing in the dark from that point on.
Well, I came across a YouTube song called My Favorite Martian today.
Yeah.
Sorry, by an artist called My Favorite Martian, and it was Grandma Found Facebook.
Wow.
Let's just say that is not appropriate.
Oh, no.
All right, so...
Yeah, I got a call the other day, and Katasha called me at 9 o'clock in the morning, so I installed an alarm clock on my other laptop and put in Knights of the Round Table. And I tell you what, waking up to that trumpet, that will give you energy. That is free energy.
Oh, well, if you want...
I'm up here to my zero turn, which I drive over to my trailer and truck and everything, and I turned the key and it went,
that's nice.
Oh, man. So I immediately grabbed the solar panel and I laid it out. That thing fired right up. So I took the solar panel with me. That was the best thing I did all day. Because every time I got something tangled up inside the blades and I had to shut it off, it took that solar panel to fire that thing back up. And that was, that's science. That's the wisdom of science. It's a good thing to have a solar panel with you.
Well, you know what's up about that, Muddy, is there's been episodes where I got like 12 acres and I'll be out on my riding lawnmower and I'll peel that thing and the battery ain't charged up and I got to push that thing all the way close enough to an outlet so I can get it.
Or carry a battery with you. I tell you what, a solar panel is so much lighter.
Yep. Well, now I got a solar panel, and all I got to do is plug into it, so...
There you go, bro.
Anyway, problem resolved. So, where do we go to from here, guys? Did we miss anything?
Well, Muddy said he woke up to a trumpet, and it energized him, but I had quite a few burritos, and my wife woke up to a trumpet, and she was not happy.
Hey, well, yeah, speaking of waking up to loud noises, if you do happen to watch my last video, my latest video, the one there called, what is it called? Forces of Darkness. Be aware that there's a warning label at one of the, right at the beginning to plug your ears for the one of the little clips that comes on there. It's pretty loud, so. I always get them with a lightning bolt, but this time there's extra in there, so.
Yeah, that would do it. That would do it.
Yeah. Anyway, that's like the wake-up call. School's in session, that kind of deal, you know?
Well, do you know what? When I was in the Philippines, mate, I saw a school bell made out of an old oxygen cylinder that they used to bang on the wall. And I thought, that's redneck technology. You will be proud.
Well, I liked it.
Ring loud.
My my wife's been wanting me to buy her one of those old style looking dinner bells. I think I'll take one of those old cans out there and make one of those out of that. Cut the bottom of it off.
What do you think? All you need is a piece of metal, a nice heavy piece of metal, bent steel into a triangle, or even something hollow. You can put beads in it. You can use it as maracas.
Yeah. You know, as crazy as all that sounds, there are so many things out there that could be repurposed. And that's some of the videos that I like watching out there on YouTube, but seeing the creativity when people repurpose stuff. We put a video link over here about a kid here a while back that made a doggone old crud. What? Oh, man, my brain just stopped. A solenoid motor. A solenoid motor. He made a solenoid motor all out of recycled stuff. And you wouldn't believe that even though this thing was wobbly as it did, how much torque that thing really had. It was impressive.
And all over the world, you've got young children that are crawling over rubbish heaps all day picking up plastic bottles for recycling so they can get the 15 or 20 cents they need. To basically buy a meal for themselves or even the family in certain cases. Why can't we get this information out to these kids so that they can start building stuff that they don't need to pay for otherwise? Are they going to be on the rubbish dumps whether we stop them or not? If they find something useful, how do we get the knowledge to them to use it?
I got an idea how we can do that. I think we start a group and get a, somehow or another we get a computer and a system to them where they can actually get internet access and power, and they can actually bring things that they find in that dump, and we can tell them all the different things that they could use that for. What do you think?
Mailbag 13.
A live Skype view where they can actually show us things and we can show them things. And basically teach them from this far away. You see what I'm saying?
We could put it on a loop, mate.
Yeah.
Look, for this component, that component, you can build this device from it.
See, and I like that thought, Steve, because that is another solution to all the different things out there. You can put this information in the hands of people who need it, you know? That one deal where you talked about how you take the water bottle and fill it with a little bleach and water and put it through the roof, you know. That was a good deal that helped him have lights during the daytime, you know.
That wasn't my idea. That was someone else's. I'm just
making sure. Well, I understand that. I understand that, but, you know, other people that didn't know about it now do know about it because of, you know, you passing that information on. That's what I'm talking about.
I mean, I want to make a couple of dry cell HVHO generators and see if I can get a 2.5 kilovolt generator to run on it without destroying it.
Yeah.
To me, that would be a move forward because I've been kind of blowing myself up with hydrogen for a while now.
Well,
it's not going to go pop next to me.
If you use some of the technology that Raymond's been working with and some of the technology that's available out there, such as sonic atomizers, sonic vaporizers, he brought a little deal over and showed it to me that turned water into a basically a really fine vapor. And so using that and a little bit of radio technology, you could actually get hydrogen on demand that you could use. And I believe that's exactly how Stan Myers was running that dune buggy, using that same concept. By vaporizing the fuel and breaking it down to its smallest molecule, it's easier to separate the hydrogen and oxygen as you need it. You see what I'm saying?
Well, if he was using platinum and palladium in his cores, it's now cheaper than gold, lads. $50 for a, what was it? I think it was $50 for a 1 gram bar of gold, and it's about $32 for palladium.
Cool.
Just looking at the prices earlier. Actually, I've got the, when precious metals take my leave them, 1 gram of sunshine gold bar, Swiss pan, is around about $50 to $52 on one site. And if I click back there, palladium is one gram bar is $32. I mean, a 1 ounce Swiss PAMP palladium assay certificate bar is 578. And it's in stock. Now, Tom, quickly before we go, what's the rarity of palladium, platinum, and gold compared to each other? Because I think one's a lot rarer than the other, isn't it?
I can give you a link. Hold on.
I was looking for one earlier. Because I mean, there's some.
Yeah, there's a really good one that's based on the abundance in the crust of the earth.
Yeah.
And it covers everything. It's not just going to answer that question that you asked, but it's going to answer the question of everything else. Some of the least rare is like oxygen occupies 46% of the Earth's crust. 27% is silicon. Aluminum is the highest level. It's 8% of the Earth's crust. Everything else is under that. Even iron is lower than that. So, if I remember correctly, iridium was like the rarest element when it came to metals.
Well, yeah, but there's stuff that's insanely more valuable than gold, or rarer than gold.
We're down we're down to the last 3 minutes. I want to eke this in real quick. Stephen Gibbons put a name to what we were talking about earlier. It says Shaziz's Scrap Head Challenge. That would be brilliant. For
is that Scrap Heap or Scrap Head?
Scrap Heap Challenge. I said Scrap Head, didn't I? All right. Okay, sorry about that. Scrap Heap. So, essentially, we could take all these brilliant minds out here and have a challenge to people to bring anything before that camera on Skype and show it to us, and that we can't find something. If we can't find something else that you could use that for that would be productive and, you know, basically common sense, then maybe they win a prize or something. What do you think?
I think it's a good idea.
Yeah, we'll show them how to use it. You know, there's tons of different things that you could use, repurpose things for. You know, and that's another thing, too. All the stuff that ends up in the dump or the scrap heaps or whatever, you know, why couldn't some of that be recycled, shipped over to countries that, you know, maybe not have the money to afford certain parts, because them old washers and dryers, they got things in there you could build wind turbine generators and stuff out of.
Well, again, though, I have to point out that all the resources for making the stuff that you're talking about, sending them parts made from, they have.
Well, then we need to teach them.
And they have a system that forces them to give that away for next to nothing while they're being brutalized in order to get it. So if you send anything to them, you're going to have a very special delivery system to make sure the individuals actually get it, or else it's going to be cooped up in a box. And they're going to use it to manipulate those people the way they use everything else.
Well, then
they send them boxes and pallets of boxes of food and whatnot, and the gangs and the government and whatnot over there just confiscates it all, and then, you know, you got to basically bow to their whim to get a little bit of it, and it sits in a warehouse until they get something they want for it, even though it wasn't even intended for them. It was intended for the people who are starving over there.
Then we need to find a brilliant system to get around that kind of mess over there and make it happen. Guys, we're down to it. So if you want, go around the table real quick and throw your last word out there. Just kind of make it brief, because we're like right down to it. So who wants to go first?
I think that
me.
Burn three times as hard. They ought to burn three times as hard for the pain and suffering they put in it. Two, Kent Anderson did a commercial for you a long time ago, and he said, if you're within the sound of his voice, you're within that 3% of the really, really lucky people.
Yep.
That's always stuck in my mind, and I'm thinking of these poor kids, man. mean, and so how are they going to get a computer to get on here and talk with us to find out this stuff or to find the way of free energy? I know that sometimes they get to a library or something that has a computer. I had one kid down there in South Africa that walked 20 miles to thank me for my videos on the ceiling fan generators, and I think that made me cry. At that point, I was almost ready to leave YouTube from a lot of insults and stuff like that. But anyway, finding some way for these people to communicate, I think, is key.
Yeah, we can do it.
I'll say enough said.
We can do it. What about you, Thomas?
Well, I'm stuck on that. You just need to get online and start looking around, because there are people trying to create these solutions. The problem is not coming up with a solution for these people. The problem is the delivery of the solution.
Yep.
Raspberry Pi is now a quad-core machine that's 64-bit, 2 gig of RAM for $35. So there's no excuse for not putting some money together and sending whole boxes of these things to people in these third world countries, so they can get online and actually communicate with each other, and even build Wi-Fi repeaters and stuff like that. So if they're not close to a Wi-Fi signal or an internet cable line or something like that, other than the fact that if you send them without actually going with them to make sure they get to the people, they're not going to get to them. Yep. So you're going to have to load them up and spend half your money that you spend on those packet on the same amount of money you spend on your resources you're sending to them. You're going to also have to dump into some really high quality mercenaries that, you know, want to do some good for the world, and will go over there and protect those resources until they get delivered directly to those people.
Amen.
And can withstand whatever, you know, assault comes at them from the local government or the local corrupt organizations and gangs and whatever else that happens to be there. I mean, these are the same people that run around in pickup trucks, and they basically carry assault rifles, and they collect people's children and then indoctrinate them into their little, you know, gangs and whatnot, and make them run drugs and go out and shoot people and who knows what all else, you know?
Yeah, and we got to get together. We got to find those solutions and make it happen. So anyway, that's brilliant, Thomas. And what about you, Raymond? We're like over right now. Raymond, he cut his microphone off. He's probably
talking. I'll tell you what, Shaziz. I was having a final thought. I usually say that at one, but I had a good phrase the other day. Nothing bad lasts forever.
Yep.
Raymond, man.
You know, Shaziz says over and over and over again, if you can't find free energy, you're just not looking for it. And I'm about to prove him right.
Well, and I'm anxious about this project you're doing. Well, folks, that basically wraps it up for the Knights of the Round Table. If you like what we talk about here, please do us the honor by sharing your the podcast links and website links, and just get people over here to support us and join in. That's what it's all about. It's that networking. We're networking via the internet. We're networking via the telephone. Our neighborhoods, we're recycling, repurposing, and redesigning all kinds of stuff using old technology that's been around. All the answers are out there. All we have to do is put those pieces of the puzzle together and get done what they keep saying they need to be done. So with that said, peace and love. You've been listening to Knights of the Round Table. Stay tuned. Take care.
Woman, man. Ma'am, sorry. What knight lives in that castle over there?
I'm 37.
What?
I'm 37. I'm not old.
Well, I can't just call you ma'am.
You could say Dennis.
I didn't know you were called Dennis.
Well, you didn't bother to find out, did you?
I did say sorry about the old woman, but from behind you looked...
What I object to is you automatically treat me like an inferior.
Well, I am king.
Oh, king, eh? Very nice.
And how'd you get that, eh? By exploiting the workers. By hanging on to outdated imperialist dogma, which perpetuates the economic and social differences in our society. If there's ever going to be any progress...
Dennis, there's some lovely filth down here.
Oh!
How'd you do?
How'd you do, good lady? I'm Arthur, King of the Britons. Whose castle is that?
King of the who?
The Britons.
Who are the Britons?
Well, we all are. We are all Britons. And I am your king.
I didn't know we had a king. I thought we were an autonomous collective.
You're fooling yourself. We're living in a dictatorship. a self-perpetuating autocracy in which the working classes...
Oh, there you go, bringing class into it again.
That's what it's all about. If only people would...
Please, please, good people, I am in haste. Who lives in that castle?
No one lives there.
Then who is your lord?
We don't have a lord.
What? I told you, we're an anarcho-syndicalist commune. We take it in turns to act as a sort of executive officer for the week.
Yes.
But all the decisions of that officer have to be ratified at a special bi-weekly meeting.
Yes, I see.
By a simple majority in the case of purely internal affairs.
Be quiet.
But by a two-thirds majority in the case of more...
Be quiet. I order you to be quiet.
Order? Who does he think he is?
I'm your king.
Well, I didn't vote for you.
You don't vote for kings?
Well, how'd you become king, then?
The Lady of the Lake. Her arm clad in the purest shimmering samite held aloft Excalibur from the bosom of the water, signifying by divine providence that I, Arthur, was to carry Excalibur. That is why I'm your king.
Listen, strange women lying in ponds distributing swords is no basis for a system of government. Supreme executive power derives from a mandate from the masses, not from some farcical aquatic ceremony.
Be quiet!
Oh, but you can't expect to wield supreme executive power just because some watery tart threw a sword at you.
Shut up!
Oh, but if I went round saying I was an emperor just because some moistened bint had lobbed a scimitar at me, they'd put me away.
Shut up! Will you shut up?
Ah, now we see the violence inherent in the system.
Shut up!
Oh, come and see the violence inherent in the system! Help! Help! I'm being repressed!
Bloody peasant!
Oh, what a giveaway. Did you hear that? Did you hear that, eh? That's what I'm on about. Did you see him repressing me? You saw it, didn't you?
Camelot. Camelot. Camelot.
It's only a model.
Shh. Knights, I bid you welcome to your new home. Let us ride to Camelot!
Red lights of the round table, we dance where we're able. We do routines and all the scenes to put work in bed cable. We dine well here in Camelot, we eat ham and jam and spam a lot. Red lights of the round table, our shows are more mid-table. So many times we give them rhymes that are quite unsingable. We're off the mad in Camelot, we sing from the diaphragm alone.
I have to push the pram a lot.
No, on second thoughts, let's not go to Camelot. It is a silly place.
Right.
Hear ye, hear ye. King Shazir the Terrible. All rise for King Shazir the Terrible and the Knights of the Round Table.